I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Congratulations. Your morning just got a bit classier. A media legend, a ferocious linebacker, a clueless producer, and you.
Searching for a replacement window online? Visit windownation.com today.
So raise a glass and act accordingly. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Oh, let's do it live on a Football Friday edition of the program. How you living, threes?
What a beautiful morning, man. I'm great.
You kidding me?
I'm
you
great.
You kidding me?
What are we doing?
What do you want, Ohio?
Unbelievable.
How about this?
Unbelievable. It's November? Okay. Whatever you
we're
say.
You and I, you know us. We're going to be complaining like crazy at the end of January, February. Not so much those months, but really March. March and early April are going to suck
I'll be
the
complaining
life out of
in
us.
January and February if we don't have some nice powder on the ground.
Yeah,
if it's like last year where it's just sloshy and no powder. I mean, I want a good dumping. There's no school days anymore anyway. Those are a thing of the past. Like, we're going to, like... when our kids grow up, like they're gonna look up and they're gonna be like, snow days. You guys had snow days? Lame.
Wait.
You guys didn't have Zoom?
What are you talking about? Why is there no snow days?
Bro, they have Zoom. There's no snow days anymore for kids. Everyone's just gonna go online. Snow days are a thing of the past. It's over. There's no snow days.
No,
there's absolutely. What do you think they're gonna do? No.
Even a society. When it snows, the kids get the day off. What are we doing?
Nope, not anymore. What are you talking about? A whole year and a half of Zoom.
Oh,
we're going to be Zooming until the 21 school year.
Boo.
So, yep.
No.
You think they're actually going to do a snow day anymore? Come on. There's not
a chance. Oh, that's so sad.
Think
what
about
it. Mean
our
to
kids
you
are going to laugh to us.
Kid.
It's like our parents saying, oh, we can walk that's uphill right. both ways. Yeah, sure you did.
Right.
You believed them until you figured out it's impossible.
Oh, man. That is tough. The pure joy of waking up on a and for us it was usually oftentimes it was snow and cold, but waking up on a middle of February 30 degrees below zero air temp day and going, you know what, probably not going to run the buses today, kids.
Yeah,
because the diesel will freeze. And
yeah,
so that was the end of that. Those,
no doubt.
And the pure joy of going, oh my God, I'm free.
Buddy,
I had one
snow day in middle school, and I had one fog delay. That's it. Want to know why? Well, we're rolling. We're rolling. All right. If we got to put damn skis on these buses, we're getting you to school. Okay. There's a pride thing here. We had a nice little delay in school for there was a moose in the parking lot. Very rare, but there was a moose in the parking lot. Principal came over. Yeah. Hey, there's a moose in the back parking lot. And we have a massive high school. I think I've sent you a screenshot before of it. We have, I mean, it's four floors. It's 16 gymnasiums, two separate weight rooms, one for football and the big sports, the other one for
college.
Like the dance team. We have like our own gymnastics gym. Anyway, yeah, it really is. I told you, it's like combining, like instead of having multiple Hilliard schools, combine them all into one. And imagine the size of what it would take for one high school to field all those kids that would be technically Hilliard or all, technically Dublin.
Oh, yeah. Or all of Dublin in one.
Or all of Ontangi in one, right? So that's kind of anyway, but I'll never forget that, like looking out of the fourth floor window and being like, oh, gosh, yeah, there is. Yeah, there is. What is she
moose.
Doing down
here? They are
not
to be
here?
Trifled with.
No, what is
they
she
are,
doing
they
down
They are
here?
Not to be messed with. They will smoke you.
Yes.
A moose will smoke you. They are not in
Very
the best
rare.
Mood. Yeah,
no,
that
they're
is.
Not.
That is not
no,
in a good
and
mood.
It's terrifying that they can run like 20-something miles per hour or whatever.
People have no idea how fast they are.
Yeah.
I think
when I was in Montana and they said that the most terrified our fly fishermen have been. I was like, have you ever seen bears out here, you know, by the stream and all that? He goes, no, but I was out here at this area and a moose was coming at me and that thing just stalked me. It stalked me. It could have caught me if it wanted, but it was just like jogging at a pace to where it was within about 15-20 yards and it was just right there and it had like an idea of like you know what, I'm saving you, I could end you right now, but I'm trying to get you the hell away from my territory.
That's right. Yeah. Actually, the thing that is the most fearful to be feared out there is the mountain lion, because they're like ninjas.
Gosh,
they're ninjas. The
do you
the
have
grizzlies...
time to fear it, or is it on you and you're
no.
done?
It's on and you're done. It's a snap neck and you don't even know it hit you. The grizzlies are, they're pretty loud. I mean, it's rare that you can that you stumble across them. I mean, they kind of keep to themselves and they don't hunt. I mean, grizzlies, you know, by nature, unless they get into cows, and then they'd like to do that a little.
I got to send you a post. One of Shelley's best friends' dad lives out, like best friend from high school, lives out in the West. I want to say he's in Utah though, and not Montana. But anyway. He always posts on his Instagram just, you know, random nights. Oh, here's some elk. Here's a moose. You know, like random stuff.
Yeah.
He's golfing, and there's two mountain lions on the fairway just staring at him, like jogging. And I'm like, why is he that close and not terrified? I'm like, this is not a zoo. This is not a – these are not pets. Anyway.
These are not pets. No.
Well, I'm going to send it to you when I get it.
That's aggressive. I mean, I've seen bighorn on the golf course, and I've seen, obviously, deer and elk and all of that, but I've never seen a mountain lion.
No, gosh. Just passing through. Level. Don't worry about it. It was two of them. It wasn't even one solo. Like, what are we doing?
They keep putting these golf courses. I was looking at the golf rankings, the top 100. I was looking at the courses out west, top 50 courses out west, and there were three from Montana in the top 50. And one of them is in a place called Eureka, Montana, which is far northwest. It's about an hour northwest of Whitefish. So if you look on a map, and some people know what Whitefish is all about, it's about an hour northwest. There's nothing there, man. And they put in this elite resort there. I don't even know where you fly into to get there. I mean, there's
like Yellowstone.
Airport.
They just created their own. They put it in Dutton's Ranch. That's what they did. They just put an airport.
Honestly, there's a lot of truth to that. There will be a fight. I mean, I don't know how you get there. But my God, this is the wilderness. No wonder the mountain lion's on the fairway. Like, you're in my home, dude. You're trying to hit a ball around? I've been living here for 100 years. What are you talking about? 100 years, 1,000. All right, we have a Football Friday for you. This is fun. Both the NFL teams are off this week in the state. You have Ohio High School at the regional final level across the state. So you have that going on tonight from the Ohio High School Association, which has been a lot of fun to watch. And then you have a game tomorrow with the Buckeyes in Jersey. When are you going?
The Buckeyes are here.
What?
Yeah.
Is this a game? Is that a Piscataway?
No, it's a home game. When you said it the other day on the interview.
I've been thinking it was at Rutgers.
I know. When you said it to the Rutgers guy on Wednesday, I was like, well, maybe Bosch is.
No,
it's a home night
game.
It's our first home night game, home conference night game in November since Nebraska.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Like years ago.
What a poor job out of me. So because there's no people,
yes.
I don't even really look at where the games are. And the only real gauge I have is where you're going.
Yeah,
so you're
I'm
going
just here.
To Maryland
I'm a home game.
Next week.
Home
you're
game
here.
And then
this
at Maryland.
Is straight dropped out.
Yeah.
It's one of the big casualties of this, is that it really
is.
Doesn't matter where
you're
playing.
I'm with you. It really doesn't matter because there's no home field.
You're playing in front of nobody, and you're playing with – you lose so much without the fans. And
we talked to Shiano yesterday. How about Shiano? His family is still here. His daughter's a senior at Columbus Academy. So he still has his house here.
Well, he liked it a lot, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And after what happened to him at Tennessee, which was an absolute ridiculous turn of events, and really how a mob mentality was able to push a bunch of misinformation and almost to the point where, well, no, not almost. It cost a man his job.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just ridiculous what happened to him at Tennessee. And I think they'd have been better off with him at Tennessee. I think he could have recruited better down there. I think he would have built a better program than Pruitt's built to this point. That being said, that's a whole other story. He obviously liked it here a great deal. This is a great town. Kids like the schools. Yeah. I mean,
He said something to me yesterday. I asked him, I said, impressions of Ryan Day. Did you know he'd be this? Kind of all that stuff. And he said, you know, every coach that he goes, I plan to be a head coach again. And every coach basically hinted at Tennessee, you know, and said every coach has a list of guys that, you know, they would want to be on their staff. He's like, and I'd identified Ryan a couple of years earlier. And then when Urban hired him, I was thrilled because I had a lot of buddies who worked with him in the NFL that said this guy is the real deal. And it's more than just X's and O's. He said, you know, it's about how do you handle coaches? How do you handle the players? How do you have a real sense for your team, all that? And he goes, at the three games that he filled in for Herbs, he was unbelievable. And I asked him because I said, you know, Ryan credits you and says he's forever in debt to you for certain things he asked during that time and all that. And so he's going through this whole deal. And I just thought it was one thing that he said on the call yesterday, which was unbelievable. And we all have mixed feelings about Shiano and the way that he coached the defense and all that, right? But he said something that I think was a a subtle shot at other coaches, because you know the coaches that have said this, but he goes, I can't stand when you take over, when coaches take over a new job and they say, oh, give me 3 years till I get my guys in here. He goes, I hate it.
Yeah.
He goes, if you stayed and you went through the stuff we went through this fall, he goes, and especially with COVID and all that, but you went through like the culture change that we're going through and the tough love that I've instituted. And he talked about how big Brendan White has been in instituting how we practice culture, all that.
Yeah.
He goes, but if you stayed, you're my guy. There's no waiting. And there's no excuses. Like, I can't stand. And I thought instantly, I could think multiple coaches in the Big Ten who have gotten new jobs and have been like, oh, wait till I get my guy. Because there's no my guys. If you're a good coach, you'll coach. You know what your talent is, but you'll coach your guys. They're your guys. And I was like, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, Urban did that in that 12 season. Now, it took a lot of tough love in that offseason to get it turned around, but he did. And then, I mean, you look at the way he feels about John Simon or Zach Bourne and those kids who were there, and the embrace that he has for those kids. I mean, that happens quickly, and the good ones are aware of that. And I do think Schiano, whatever people think about what he did here in terms of what the defenses look like here, the dude is a program builder. He is a recruiter. He is certainly equipped to be a CEO. And if you doubt that, just go look at what he did the first time at Rutgers. And the job that to be able to pull that thing, when you were showing me 9 top 25 wins in their history against ranked teams, and the majority came during his tenure, the vast majority. What was it, 6 of them came during his time, something like that?
Yeah.
So you think about that. They have nothing before him, and they've had nothing after him. So he is their football history by himself, and now trying to have some sort of a build here. And I think you and I kind of see it similarly in terms of what Rutgers can be, what the ceiling is. And it's really, you know, third, fourth best team in the Big Ten East.
Yep.
Bowl game. Get to 6-7 wins. Every once in a while win 8. Every once in a while knock off Michigan or Penn State, something like that. Beat Maryland consistently, at least win most of the time against Maryland. Try to win 30, 40% of the time against Michigan State. I mean, that's the way I view it. I don't know it can be anything more than that.
Yep. Yep. And this program is a reach. I think the unique thing after talking to him and really talking to people that are on his staff, like almost everyone there is a Jersey guy. From that area.
You'd have to be, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you have to be?
Yep. And for instance,
who's
their
high
coordinator?
Coach?
Their O coordinator is Sean Gleason, right? Mm-hmm. He was an O coordinator at Princeton, and that's when he got on Schiano's radar. He's a Jersey guy. He was O coordinator last year under Gundy at Oklahoma State, where their offense is top 10 in the country. And when Schiano goes, I called him, and I thought to myself, I'm not sure I'm able to get this kid back to New Jersey area because, you know, he just had a great year at Oklahoma State. He just moved his family there. You know, Chuba Hubbard, ton of talent, right? And he goes, but he's a Jersey guy. And there's something about Jersey guys. They just love being home. And he goes, so I was able to get him to move back after 1 year in Oklahoma. I'm like, you think about that from a career trajectory, all that, right? And it's something about those, like, for instance, the interim coach, Nunzio Campanelli, he's still there as tight ends coach. Like, those guys, his philosophy is he wants to be able to recruit. Basically, he said, if we have to leave New Jersey or the surrounding states to go get talent, it's because we have to. It's not a want thing. Like, he wants his whole thing to be Jersey boys and everybody else outside of that. Like, if we have to go to Florida or go to Ty somewhere else, it's because those Jersey boys chose elsewhere. That's the only reason why he wants. I mean, it's an identity. That's what it is. It's an identity. It's a state school for them, and it's an identity.
It's a blueprint. It is an identity, and there is a path for success there. And if you build upon it over 10 years, 15 years, you can have sustained success. It just hasn't been done, and I don't know if anybody other than him could do it, to be quite honest. I think he might be one of one who could have that type of success there because he has the credibility in the state. And, as you mentioned, his staff. That being said, it's going to be an ugly Saturday night for him at the Shoe. I honestly don't even look at where we play these games anymore. That's how crazy this has gotten. Absolutely nuts. We will get into the matchup. We will have Doug and Tim on, as we always do on a Football Friday. You had a Thursday nighter last night where the 49ers showed some heart, but Aaron Rodgers showed about all else that you needed, plus COVID running wild in the sports world. All sorts of things going on that front, from cancellations and so forth. Get you updated on all that. Get you set for the Buckeyes and the Scarlet Knights as well, off and running here on a Football Friday. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Buckeyes, Jackets, hard-hitting talk, and Rothman saving dogs. You know, just a typical day at a sports radio station. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Meet or on the rocks. Just act accordingly.
Starts with a glass of bourbon, then goes to, oh, First Blood's on. I think I'll watch this again.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
And brought to you by our great friends at Window Nation. If you're in need of search for replacement windows, I couldn't recommend them enough. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com. They will take care of you the way that they take care of us. You watched a little Thursday Night Football last night?
Right, I watched a quarter. And I was like,
it's a beautiful uniform matchup, isn't it?
It really is.
Isn't that just
it
beautiful?
Is. It just screams history. Yeah. Screams, you know, basically when I think, like if you want to think of a matchup that just screams National Football League, It's Packers Niners, it's Cowboys Steelers.
Yep.
You know,
both
gosh,
played this weekend.
It's Niners, you know, it's Niners Cowboys, right? At least for me growing up, that's what it was. Is because those teams were always, I mean, legit. Really seemed like whatever team Deion Sanders went to was going to get to the Super Bowl. That's what it felt like.
Well, the NFC. The NFC at that time, you know, slightly before you, it was a rotation. I mean, being about the NFC East between the Redskins, the Giants, and the Cowboys, all of the Super Bowls won from the, you know, the mid-80s on through. Giants won two, Redskins won three, Cowboys won three. You think about the job that and then you throw the 49ers. These NFC powerhouses were just – they were so good, and the NFC at that time was just incredible. The league has evened out in the last 20 years. It's evened out a lot, and to where the balance of power, frankly, has been more in the AFC with Manning and Brady and certainly even Roethlisberger over the last 20 years. The quarterbacks are the key of it. And then you saw a great one last night in Aaron Rodgers. This was one when we did the scores yesterday. I'm going, I don't understand 7.5.
Right.
I mean, the 49ers are playing with nobody.
Yeah.
And the number actually went down. It was 7.5 when you and I called it. By the middle of the afternoon, it was 7. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. The 49ers don't have any players. How are they? I mean, I like Kyle. I think he's incredible.
Right.
But I'm to believe that's enough to overcome Rodgers?
And you could hear Buck trying to sell that, right? They're trying to sell how great Kyle is.
Really were selling Kyle.
They were trying to sell, like, oh, he loves these challenges of playing, you know, undermanned.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they're trying to sell eyeballs to stay on this game is what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the biggest challenge when you're doing a game that you know, like at least for us, and really for them too, you know that Green Bay has a massive following. So no matter what, in Green Bay, Wisconsin, people are sitting at home and Packers Nation is big. They are going to sit and watch that football game. So they'll have good ratings. Because the Packers, like we used to laugh whenever the Pro Bowl voting came out. Whenever the fan voting comes out, almost every single Packer is atop the NFC. And then it gets weighted out by the players and the coaches. But like a third of it goes to the fans. Well, if you let up to all the fans, you'd have nothing but Packers. Nothing but Packers in the Pro Bowl. Because they're going to vote all their guys up just from fandom. All their starters anyway. So in the same way, like when we try to sell the game, right? Like we have to think of in the open, how do we sell this football game to the crowd that's watching? And how do we keep Ohio State fans essentially around in the second half? And you sell, basically, you're going to get a peek at the future. Hopefully
that's
you get a peek at the efficiency of this offense, right? Can you look at any historical things that are awesome? I mean, one of the things that I'm telling them is the things that we talked about earlier in the week, like with Garrett and Olave both having over 100 yards in back-to-back weeks, first time that's been done at Ohio State. They're on pace to get over 1,000 yards without the college football playoff.
Yeah.
So they've already played one opponent that was supposed to be our toughest test. I'm going to assume they're not going to go over 100 each game, but one of them is going to get 1,000 yards. There's only been 5 cats to do it in our history. I'm like, we got to show that because it's remarkable. We got to show, you know, the future. Are we going to see Steel Chambers, who people are excited to see? And are like, well, why didn't he get more attention at Penn State? Well, I'm assuming he'll get attention, right? We haven't seen Julian Fleming a whole lot. Will we see Scott? Will we see Mookie Cooper? Will we see, you know, all these guys that you've seen in recruiting? Who are we going to see late in the game? Who's the first quarterback in? You know, those are the answers.
That's huge.
If they're still watching,
big. Yeah, there's no spring. You have – this is the beauty if you're Buck and Aikman calling Packers 49ers, and it's a beauty that you have tomorrow calling Buckeyes and Rutgers, is that the Buckeye fans aren't going anywhere. You may peak, because isn't Clemson Notre Dame a night game too?
Yeah.
So you'll peak.
Flip over. Yep.
You'll flip over and you'll catch a little of that, you know, if once our game gets a little bit out of control. But people want to see the answer to the question you just asked. Who's the first quarterback in?
Right.
Is there a running back down the roster? Can we see more of Julian Fleming?
Right.
Let's see a little bit more of him. Can we see Jameson Williams unlocked a little bit? These are things that people are going to want to see. They're going to see the young linebackers. They're going to see the young secondary. All of these things will keep people on it. And so that's the incredible benefit of if you're doing a Packers game or you're doing a Buckeye game, is those things will be the case. Couple of things to update you on just from the standpoint of the COVID protocols and where we're standing and what's canceled, what's not. Washington Cal is canceled. They say postponed. I don't understand how it's not canceled. They don't have an empty week.
Right?
They're playing every week, so it's, I don't understand any
scenario. And now, is that off of one test? I think I saw Klatt tweet on it that it was based off of one positive test Cal has, but due to their local regulations, that shut everything down.
If that's the case, then the schools in the state of California should not be involved.
They have no chance.
Because that's impossible. The disease is, I mean, the virus is spreading like wildfire. So there's no chance you're going to play. Every time a kid gets a test, you're done. You got no chance in the state of California. They're going to play two games.
Yeah.
What's interesting, though, too, Army Air Force is postponed. Also, the Navy game is postponed. And this is the reason I bring these up is for the people who are out there who say, well, you're not doing your due diligence. That's why you got COVID. Army, Air Force, Navy. Okay?
Yep.
There's nobody more doing their diligence. There's nobody more disciplined than them, and it's happening there. So there's no shame in getting this thing.
No.
You didn't do anything wrong. Okay? My guess is that they're doing as much right as can be done right at Army, Air Force, and Navy. And they've had to cancel games. Minnesota's defensive coordinator is out, and as you know, Wisconsin Purdue is postponed.
This is a tweet from Joel Klatt. So it's 14 hours ago. I can't imagine how frustrated these players are tonight to have this happen. One positive test, asymptomatic, has derailed the game. Local health regulations are 100% to blame for this. Essentially, in Berkeley, because one kid got it, the whole position group was ordered to quarantine, so none were available to play in the game. The whole position group. That's their local health regulations.
Then they have no chance. You have no chance. If that's how it's going to be, it's just you have no chance.
Now, I don't know if that's California. I don't know if that's just Berkeley. I don't know if that's the county. I have no idea. But it doesn't seem like the Pac-12 is going to have a lot of success if that's the case anyway.
No, and certainly none of the schools in California will have no chance. There's four of them. So there's no way that you can keep it out of 100 kids.
Right.
I mean, there's no way. Coming up next in What's Up, this Buckeye offense versus the Rutgers defense. We've touched on a little bit of it. You'll hear from Coach Day as well in terms of what he's looking for from his team. That's coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
If only we had a live and local morning show. Oh, wait, we do. Morning Juice with Beamer, Carpenter, and Schlags.
Weekdays starting at 6.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. It's Bishop and Laurinaitis' What's Up.
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
All right, here's what's up on a football Friday. Buckeyes offense versus the Rutgers defense. That is the matchup we are going to focus on right now. Before we get into that specifically, though, here was Ryan Day yesterday speaking of Shiano's impact at Rutgers already being felt.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the team, you know, that first game, they beat Michigan State pretty soundly. So that's, you know, significant right off the bat. And then when you watch them on both sides of the ball, they're playing hard. He's brought in some different talent in there. And they're playing, you know, with some energy. They're playing tough, playing smart. So you can already see the impact that he and his staff are having. So, you know, even this week, I mean, we got to make sure that we're on top of our game. You know, this team would want nothing more than come in and, you know, get this game into the fourth quarter. So we got to do a great job recognizing, you know, the challenge that they provide in all three phases and playing, you know, as fast as we possibly can.
Pretty illuminating right there. They would like nothing more than to get this game into the fourth quarter. And I think if you're Shiano, that's what you hope. And the best chance, not even that really, you hope you get there in the third quarter. You hope that this thing's competitive at half and you can give a good speech at half and come out with what you hope is a fighting chance in the second half. I mean, that's just the difference in the disparity of the two teams. And in order to do so, you are going to have to slow down what we do offensively. But threes, the problem there is what they do defensively ought to fit right into our hands.
Yeah, it does. They do a lot of man. They still have the Greg's not going to change his scheme, you know, wholeheartedly. Now, what they have is, when you look at their front seven, their best player on the D-line, I think, anyway, is their D-tackle, Julius Turner. And he's an undersized guy that's disruptive in the sense where he just uses that size, you know, as far as to try to be really quick on the interior. Can he do that against our All-American guard, Wyatt Davis? I doubt it, right? Against Josh Myers, I doubt it. I think they're looking at that matchup, and they're excited. They have linebackers who play, you know, I think, to be honest, I think they're very disciplined. And probably that's their strength. I think the two linebackers to Brendan White are probably their strength of the defense. Outside, their corners have played a whole lot, but they're not going to see two wideouts like this. So it's going to be a struggle for Rutgers defense. So how did they beat Michigan State? They forced 7 turnovers, a lot of those fumbles, some of them sack fumbles, and they had a really short field. I think they started a bunch of their drives in Michigan State territory, where against Indiana, their starting position was on their own 31. That's the difference. They weren't able to drive down the field. So if they're going to have a chance to be in this game, I would say in the second quarter, Bo, it's going to have to be, you know, defensively punching the football out. They're going to look, every coach when they play Ohio State says we cannot have explosive plays, right? We cannot allow the 20 plus plays, all that. That sounds great in the meeting room. It's extremely difficult to execute because as you look at them, they don't have a guy that is really an elite pass rusher. They don't have a guy that can get after the quarterback, someone you have to worry about. So if you're not getting pressure on Justin, then how's your secondary going to hold up when you're out, you know, basically outmanned? It's a whole lot to be concerned about when you're Greg Schiano, and they understand that. And the only way you try to flip it is, you know, okay, we gave up an explosive play, but as we rallied to the ball, we punched it out, right? Or something like that, to where you're like, you can feel that there's no way that we're going to be able to keep up, but because we've turned the ball over a couple times, we're able to, you know, kind of stay in this thing. That I don't see it happening, but that's kind of got that's what they're preaching. They're preaching takeaways, no explosives, you know, keep chopping. That's their whole philosophy over there, is just keep chopping. And that's what he's been proud of. Look, he said whether it was Michigan State, whether it was Indiana, he's like, nothing's worse than when you're a coach and a game's going a certain way and you have to almost beg your guys to jog off the field or run off the field, right? That's that, like, yeah, it's that feeling that they're kind of deflated. Feeling, yeah.
It's tough.
And he said that we haven't had that. You know, we didn't have that against Indiana. They kept sprinting off the field. They love playing the game of football. They keep chopping. He goes, that's what we want to see, you know, Saturday, that the guys aren't just totally deflated.
And with that being said, this is the team that they are playing, the Buckeyes. If you think about it, everything they do is so deflating.
Yes.
You think about that run from Garrett Wilson to start the game last week, and you went, God, it's over. It's over. It's 3 plays, and you score, and you're like, my God. It's same thing with this is such a quick strike offense, and it can hit you in a lot of different ways. At this point, I don't know that there's anybody in the run game other than Justin who could take it 60 yards on the ground. We haven't seen that yet. Maybe that happens as the season goes along.
Well, Master can. I was reminded as I was studying that Master had that 70-yard touchdown run against Northwestern last year. It just has to set up. It has to set up nicely, right? It has to be Rutgers is a man, and there's no middle field safety, and boom, he hits the hole untouched, and now he's out, right?
Do you think even after the injury he still has that type of
top
end speed?
I don't know, to be honest. I don't know.
Feels like maybe next year that comes. I don't know.
Yeah,
it seems like he doesn't quite have the explosiveness.
He looked better week 2 than week 1, as far as the burst. But you're right. Schiano compared this, buddy, and you're exactly right. He compared it to the Miami teams of old, where he says, you can be thinking you're fighting in a game down 10, and next thing you know, you blink, it's a turnover, it's a punt, it's all 3 phases, and they just put 21 up on you in a minute and a half. And you're like, what the heck happened? He goes, that's what it is.
It's one of those things where you go out on – so you remember this. You played the NCAA football game. There's the play where you can run it in 2 variations. You can either run it with a slot or you can run it with the running back, where it's basically – it's an out and up. From either of those positions, and you just know it's there always. Like, it almost doesn't matter what level you're playing on. But certainly when you're playing the teams that can't hang, they just can't cover that route. It's just a flaw in the game. It's just there over and over. That's how I feel when this team takes the field against teams like this, and frankly, many in the Big Ten. It's like, it's almost a video game aspect of it. It's like, okay, well, why not first play the game? Why don't we just see if any of these guys can run as fast as Olave and Wilson?
Right.
And let's just see. I don't think they can. Justin, why don't you just throw it 45 yards down the field, let him run under it? I mean,
right.
That's the way that I approach these type of games. It's not the way you'd want to, but they are so explosive, so talented, and a quarterback who is so accurate and can do everything. If you're Rutgers, you can be in it. I think about Nebraska. Scott Frost and his team, you think about what they did for the majority of that first half. They did everything right. Everything right. And they're in it, right? Or as much as you can be.
Yep.
What, two bet? A turnover, miss two calls that go against them, just stupid penalties, and all of a sudden it's over at half.
Yep.
And you go, wait, what happened, man? We executed our game plan. We had explosive plays in the run game. We were playing pretty good defensively.
Yep.
Mistake here, mistake, three mistakes, it's over. It's done.
It's gone. Yep.
See you next week. You're down 21. Yep. You go, what the hell just happened here?
Yep.
And that's what happens when you play this. That's how good this team is, and that's the problem for these Big Ten teams. For perspective, we will head out and talk to our good buddy Doug LaMaurice, as we do every single Football Friday. That is coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Head to 971thefan.com to listen on demand and subscribe to all our podcasts. Wasting time has never been easier. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Their favorite sport is berating their producer.
You just sat there for 10 minutes.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
On a Football Friday, we head out on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Our good buddy Doug LaMaurice, Cleveland.com, who we talk to every week at this time and look forward to greatly. Doug, you've had to cover, you know, quite a few of these types of games. Rutgers has been in this league a long... Let's go big picture on Rutgers first. They've been in this league a long time now. I thought it was a mistake at the time. Said it as much at the time. They're here now. We got to deal with it. Shiano, is he the only guy who can build something there? And what is, at the very ceiling, what exactly is that something?
I think the ceiling is the fourth best team in the East. You know, that Michigan State kind of level, not super good Michigan State, not like D'Antonio when he was rolling 10 wins a season Michigan State, but you know, not Michigan, not Penn State, not Ohio State, but can you win? Can you win your non-conference games, and can you win six or seven games and get to a bowl and once every 10 years knock out one of the big boys? I think that's the ceiling, but like Maryland's trying to get to that ceiling too, and Indiana's trying to get to that ceiling, and I think everybody wants to be maybe that fourth best team in the East, and they can't all be it. But you know, I guess that's a goal. I don't know how long it'll take them to maybe get there, though.
Doug, how will you judge success tomorrow night? I think that's one of the hardest things for Ryan Day, is how is he going to know his team is taking that incremental step to getting better? Right, you saw it from Nebraska to Penn State, how they improved. How are you going to view it with the talent discrepancy between the two clubs?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, offensively, I don't know. I mean, not with the passing game. I think the passing game we know about now. You know, I don't know what Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson and Justin Fields can really show us. I'm not sure what the offensive line can show us, because the offensive line played well against Penn State. I think the run game, you'd like to see Master Teague sort of replicate what he did against Penn State, maybe Trey Sermon pick it up a little bit. So I think you can find out something from the running backs. And then the defense, I think, yeah, can learn a little something. Increased pass rush from the defensive ends. How's the secondary look? Do they feel connected? So I think you can learn a little bit from the secondary, but I think a lot of it is what you learn the most in a game like this is from the backups. When the guys get in, you know, how do some of the young receivers look if they get to play? How do the backup quarterbacks look if they get to play? How's Paris Johnson look if he gets to play? Stuff like that, that sometimes we'll learn more in the second half, maybe when the backups are in, than we will in the first half.
Doug, if you were Ryan Day, how would you handle this next four or five games from the standpoint of, I do think that there's some obligation. I mean, his kids came back. I mean, kids who didn't need to, like Justin and Wyatt Davis and Sean. I mean, those guys, they were going to be first-round picks, or Justin's going to be the second quarterback off the board. He didn't need to come back. He's on Good Morning America, fighting for his season. Like, he's a Heisman guy. Like, there's obligation to get him his stats, isn't it? Even if you don't want to acknowledge it. In the meantime, you also didn't have a spring, so you didn't even know who your backup quarterback is. How do you balance this if you're Ryan Day?
Yeah, these discussions are so hard, but I do believe in that. That it's one of those things people say when they want to take out the starters, take them out when you know you're going to win. I say, well, you could put Justin in a bubble for a month. You don't need Justin Fields to win the next four games. If you're going by when is the game in hand, the game's hand is in hand now.
Yeah.
So, but football's fun. I mean, James, football's fun. playing a game is fun. So you got to let the guys do what they're here to do. So I think it's a hard balance. I like letting Justin play late in the games. I mean, the debate all the time of like, why is he in the fourth quarter? It's like he's in because he's a football player. It's fun to play football, and that's why he's here. I think this might be the exception, the one exception. It's the closest to a non-conference game this year. It's at home. There aren't travel roster restrictions. I think maybe tomorrow is the one game where their guys are out earliest of the whole year. But in general, I'm in favor of letting your dudes play because that's why they're here.
Doug, I'm going to give you a few areas on the team. Secondary depth, I think, will be interesting. How about the backup quarterback? Who comes in first? Is it Jack again? Is it CJ? Are those the two areas that you're looking for in a game that what you expect to be one-sided? Is that the because for me, I think the biggest story, and obviously calling the game, you're trying to think, how do you keep Buckeye fans interested? It's, okay, well, who's next at QB, right? And is he on the roster? Or who is going to help replace Cam Brown in the back end in that rotation that was already thin? Who's going to step up? Are those the two main things you think of?
Yeah, I think they probably are. The other one is, we were talking a lot on our podcast this week. Like, I think Julian Fleming got one snap against Penn State.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a guy looking for a little run. You know, sometimes it's hard to be a five-star and you come in and you want to play. I'm curious if maybe they give Julian Fleming some time to show what he can do and feel good about himself. But I do think replacing Cam Brown's a big deal. He had a role in the nickel defense. Does that mean you leave Marcus Williamson on the field even more now in that slot role? Does it mean Tyreek Johnson has a role? Does it mean somebody like, I don't know, Ronnie Hickman or Josh Proctor or somebody else who fills a role? Because that's a role you're looking to fill, sort of that extra DB on that third down look. So that's an actual role. And then it's a psychological thing with the backup quarterback, at least in our heads, as we're trying to analyze. You think Ryan's trying to keep it balanced. So if Jack Miller came in last time, now you assume it'll be C.J. Stroud's turn this time. But if it's Jack Miller again, it feels like, well, does that tell us something? So I think just how the decision there with Ryan is so interesting. And then when they are in, how do they look? But watching Ryan try to balance this at quarterback is the most interesting thing. I would expect it would be C.J. Stroud if he's trying to keep it even.
Doug, big picture one for me. We've seen Ohio State play Penn State, and to me, I felt like it was over after the first drive. Felt like we knew at that point, okay, that they're just not on the level, and that's the way that the game ended up playing out. I've seen Michigan play twice. They lose to Michigan State at home. These are the most credible candidates to be a threat, and it seems that the gulf between this program and those is bigger now than it's been at any time that I've covered this program. You've covered it longer than I have. Do you feel that way to you?
Yes. I think there's a yes, but with Penn State. I think with Michigan, yes. I don't know how you get away from that. I think with Michigan, it's yes. With Penn State, they were missing their two best guys. Like, you put Micah Parsons on that field, you put Journey Brown on that field. It doesn't mean Penn State wins. I don't think you necessarily feel the gulf the same way. You know, if and when can Penn State ever really, really get a guy? You know, give Graham Mertz to Penn State and see what happens. Like, they have to get an elite, elite quarterback, and then what could happen? So I don't know. I think there's still something that Penn State still down the line still has a chance to hang with Ohio State sometimes. Michigan, I wonder about it. I really do. And the hard thing about this season, the way it's playing out, is I thought the team that all of a sudden looked like maybe had any chance to run with Ohio State was Graham Mertz in Wisconsin, and they played one game and then their season exploded. So, yeah, I mean, it certainly nobody's catching them, but can Wisconsin and Penn State hang? Maybe, still in the best of circumstances.
Yeah, and now with just having to play the six games to get to the Big Ten title game, it's likely Wisconsin won't have a chance to be there. So that's the other part of it. That's the other part of it as well. Great talking to you, Doug, as always, my friend. Appreciate you.
All right, fellas, have a good one.
He's our great buddy Doug Lemerese calling in on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline, Cleveland.com. He is one of the best big thinkers, and it's under more of a microscope this week because of we're playing Rutgers and coming off of what happened at Michigan. That's why this starts, and the fact that we've already beaten Penn State. And so you look around, you go, okay, who's out there? There's nothing to point to. That's the tricky thing.
I don't know what the big picture is going to be up north when they lose to Indiana this weekend.
I think he's No, don't pay attention to the scores here. I don't know anything about Michigan. No idea. But just look at the body language of the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like a man who's done, who's defeated.
Yeah.
And there's already these rumblings about the Houston Texans and getting back to the NFL. Maybe he says, you know what? I when I got to control my own guys and I got to try to compete with them for players, I don't have it. And that's a tough thing to admit. But it would be a stunning thing if he were to leave there without a win over Ohio State. That would be a stunning, like almost like if he somehow pulled an upset this year, that would be the perfect time to walk away. If somehow we could pull that off. You know, like just, all right, I did. All right, see you later. Leave on a high note.
I'm out.
All right, we will get back to the college football at 10:20. Coming up next, we'll take a look at the NFL at the midway point heading into week 9. Hand out some awards, see how we did from our preseason prognostications. Go around the Big Ten at 10:20, around college football at 10:30. Big game in South Bend between Clemson and Notre Dame. And, of course, in an 11 o'clock hour, all Buckeyes all the time. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
If you say something with confidence, then you can't be wrong.
I don't even know.
Is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Second hour here on a Football Friday. Boy, the other thing that you, real quick here, imagine being Chris Holtmann. So they're supposed to play in South Dakota.
Yeah.
And now can't. I mean, I just feel
that's
for due
to the
these
and
people,
that's due to the positivity rate in South Dakota.
In South Dakota. Because
as
it's a state that we now have to have a quarantine.
But it's okay. But my pay grade.
I know. No, I know. It's tough. It's just really stinks, honestly. It's really tough to try to do this. And I saw the news, and you think about the wide-ranging impact of all this. The news yesterday at Clemson, where they shut down men's track and field in the South, in the ACC. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a monster. But these are the casualties of this. They were always going to be there.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see them across college football, where the dollars just aren't adding up. We talked just about some of the incredible hits that the NBA and NHL are going to take.
I mean,
those are
the
billionaire
NBA?
Owners.
December 22nd?
Look, I laid this out for you guys yesterday and basically me parroting what Bill Simmons said. But listen, you're talking about a half of your revenue gone.
Yes.
From $10 billion to $4.5 billion, projected $10 billion to $4.5 billion. Like, listen, we got to get back on track.
That's the thing, is that the players can complain about, you know, sitting out, all that stuff, right? But when it comes down to, hold on, I signed a deal to make $30 million a year, and you're telling me I'm going to make 15? Oh, no. Right. Hey, I don't care how sore I am. Let's revote this thing in.
Right, because you got to get back to making the 30 as quick as possible, and the only way that happens is with the fans in a year.
Yep.
So that's where it is. I mean, just punting on next season. It's a pretty, from a fan standpoint, that's where you're at. All right,
why don't they let individual states do it? Like, if you're the Cleveland Cavaliers and you feel like, you know, we can let 8,000 in. Not that it covers it, but does that change it? Does that help you a little more than maybe it did?
Well, I think
versus,
they will.
Hey, Golden State, guess what? You can't do anything because you're in California. Sorry.
I think they will. I mean, the NFL's done that. I mean, the NFL, there's 12,000.
Which surprised me, to be honest, but I'm glad they did. It did surprise me that they didn't have one general flat rule for everybody, but I think the NFL kind of realized, look, guys, we're in a pandemic. We're trying to save as much as we can for these franchises. Let's just 1 year.
I don't think there's any doubt the NBA will do that. I think the NHL will do that. I think if the Blue Jackets can say to Mike DeWine, hey, wait, then this is what the NFL teams had to do.
Yep.
Go to Mike DeWine and say, here's a way where we can have this many people in this stadium and keep them apart. And if this is how we're doing it. They'll wear masks all the time. Now, it's outdoor versus indoor. I get it. But nevertheless, this is how you do it. And maybe that number for the Blue Jackets is 5,000. I mean, it might be. It might be 5,000 people. That could be it. But fine. That's better than nothing. I mean, you take it at that point. You take whatever you can get. All right, let's do some NFL awards at the midway point. Bodie, I should have given you a heads up on this, but if you can, find me one of the little traveling music from the NFL. It can be either the NFL films or the primetime, either one. Oh, what a job out of you. Let's start with the team that surprised you the most.
This is his personal iPad or iPod. This is not.
I think it is too.
You know, this isn't even part of the radio.
I think he just listens to NFL.
Well, yeah, I mean,
clearly.
Yeah. I mean, where do you even stop with the reasons that he's better?
Right.
Unbelievable. Ooh, status report in. Here we go. Who's unavailable? Anyway, sorry, Jerry just sent the status report. Team who surprised the most, huh? Yep. I'm going to go I thought about doing it, like, who negatively surprised me with how bad they are, but I thought, you know what? I can't. The sun's out. I'm getting some natural vitamin D today. It's going to be near 70 in November in Ohio. Let's appreciate it. So positively, where else is it sunny a whole lot, Bo? Where else is it sunshine, dry? The guy has a beautiful house.
Arizona.
It is. I'm going to go with the Cardinals.
Valley.
Not the fact that they're going to be flirting with the playoffs. No, as you look, they're second in the NFC West. They're the team that's 5-2. And you're saying to yourself, oh, 5-2 are the Cardinals. All right. Okay. So they're the team that has surprised me because I thought they'd be good and I thought they'd be flirting, to be honest, as the fourth NFC West team. This is before the 49ers got decimated by injuries, but I thought that they would be the fourth team and be like, gosh, could all four teams make it? No, they're second. They're second right now. And with the Rams, put it this way, I'm more confident in the Cardinals when I go to make a pick on an NFL Sunday than I am with the LA Rams.
Yeah. That's a fair one. One I would add is Miami at 4-3. And I would say that if they didn't have what I believe is an obligation to play Tua to find out what he is in case they have to draft another quarterback, they can deny it all they want. That's what
you heard
clearly,
Flores. That's not the case. They're not seeing what
he is. You know
what
else, though? The other thing I saw is I saw Ryan Fitzpatrick playing at a top five quarterback at the league level. And they said, no, we don't want this anymore.
Touché.
So that tells you about all I need to know. But them at 4-3 is a surprise to me. Disappointing. Team that has disappointed you the most. There's some big ones in this.
I just put the entire NFC East, but most specifically the Dallas Cowboys, because they were trash with Dak. They were not good with Dak. And I just couldn't believe a team that some had picked to make a run at the Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And when they showed up with how they played defensively early on, with the names that they had, you were like, oh, my. What is this?
Yeah.
It was embarrassing at defensive football. That's what it was. Embarrassing.
I can't pick Dallas. You touched on them. The injuries there have been ravaged. Here are three that are hard to wrap your head around. None harder than Houston.
Yes.
Houston has one win.
Atlanta, I'll say this, though. The way they started was terrible.
Yeah.
And then you're
really
right. And then they haven't really been able to get their mojo since.
And the Minnesota Vikings.
Yes.
Those four teams.
Yep.
I had Houston and Minnesota as playoff teams, and doesn't look like clearly neither one's going to be there at this point.
Yep.
Player who has surprised you the most.
So I have him on here a couple of times, but it's Joe Burrow. And why do I put Joe Burrow? I expected him to be good. I did not expect him to have the consistent performances of 300-plus passing yards, the one 400-yard. I did not expect that with that roster. I just didn't. I think he's been a week-in, week-out. Since what week two, I think he has not been a reason why they've lost any of the games. They've been in almost every single football game except one. So you look at the roster, I'm not sure you could play, you know, Madden on rookie and keep every game as tight as Joe Burrow has done in real life.
Yeah. No, it's been impressive. I'll go two guys where I just was dead wrong on both. Justin Herbert, I was most wrong on. He shocked me how good he is. I really didn't see it. I didn't see it with him in college, and I got that one dead wrong. Josh Allen, some of the things that I saw in him still exist. But what I had wrong was how effective they would be in getting the best out of him. And while they have hit a little lull right now, they're 6-2. And through the first four games, you could argue he was in that MVP conversation. So those are two guys who have surprised. Coach of the first half of the season.
You could have thrown Ryan Tannehill in there, too. He's lost some luster in the last few, but his numbers were up there with Patrick Mahomes. So I put Mike Vrabel. And I know his luster has died a little bit with the loss to the Bengals, but here's why. Just simply for keeping things on the rails, keeping the train from going off during the whole COVID thing, the fact that they were able to come, they're 5-2 and they're tied with the Colts, leading the AFC South. And they had an outbreak where they had to shut down for 2 weeks and went out and won a football game.
Yeah.
We cannot take that lightly. I think that Vrabes deserves to be in there. Now, obviously, if he's sitting there 6-1 and being the Bengals, you feel, everyone probably is agreeing with that. It's a little bit of a dull, but I expect them to jump back this week and get another dub.
Mike Tomlin is 7-0.
Yes,
so that
he is.
And he won at Tennessee, at Baltimore. But right now, I would go Kevin Stefanski. The Cleveland Browns are 5-3. They have played two games. two games with the offensive line they intended. They have played zero games and will play zero games with the defense that they intended. They have played three games without Nick Chubb, Wyatt Teller, two games without Austin Hooper, two games without Odell Beckham Jr. And they're 5-3. And they're winning the games they're supposed to win. And he's not getting it all the time out of the quarterback position either. So with all of that, to be at 5-3, pretty good job out of him. Rookie of the year.
Oh, it's Joe.
He is extraordinary. He's even better than the numbers would lead you to believe.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Joe. It's. Yeah. I mean, doesn't need to be a deep discussion on it. I don't even know.
If he ends up being like an MVP of the league, are we going to put his picture in the Woody? Developed here?
I hope not. I hope not.
I mean, do you
if he that? If his name appears under the Bengals helmet, you know, on the NFL wall, I'd be like, come on, guys.
Well, he's here longer than he was there.
I don't care.
I agree. Just
saying. He left here to play. We did not play him. He left here to go play. If he stayed here, he's not drafted number one overall. He's not in the NFL. Think about that. If he stays here, he's not even in the league. So, no, we can't claim him. Stop it.
Isn't that amazing? Because you're right. You're right.
I'm probably would have played. Buckeye.
Well, if he would have been here, Justin Fields wouldn't have been because he would have played after Dwayne went pro. Honestly,
I'll put it this way. I don't think we would have gotten the best out of him in what we were doing when Urban was the head coach. It was just different. It was JT Barrett. It was a different idea. But with Ryan Day as the head coach, if you said, hey, Joe Burrow is getting recruited and he's a dude right now on the roster, you'd be like, oh, I'm excited to see what that looks like.
Yeah.
Like, what's Joe Burrow look like with these wide receivers? Well, we saw really it last year at LSU. That's what we saw.
Right. You're getting off track. But we're getting off track a little bit here. But if he had beaten out Haskins and had 2 years to play here with Ryan Day calling plays, it would have been the same thing at LSU.
Yes.
Would have been the same thing.
But anyway, as far as claiming Burrow. Him, we can't.
Offensive player of the year, non-quarterback.
Oh, well, I did not have that. Where'd you throw the non-quarterback in there? Mine just says OPO of the year midway point. Maybe it's because it's going to be the same as my MVP. It's okay. You go first because I'm going to go first
because I did throw that in on you. I'm going to go Derrick Henry. And I think you go Alvin Kamara here as well. And I think you go DK Metcalf here. I think those are the guys who jump to my mind when I think about this from an offensive player of the year, non-quarterback. But Derrick Henry leads the NFL in rushing. Think about what they've had to do. Everything they do depends on him being what he is and the threat of him. And the other one is Kamara. Those are the two that jump out to me in terms of – but Metcalf is right there. He's right there.
Yeah, and I mean, I think after looking at around the NFL at everything, you have to say that, man, with Derrick Henry. I mean, the fact that teams line up against them and they know what's about to come and he's still able to do what and think about how much he got used last year. One of the biggest questions about Derrick Henry this year was, can he repeat it because of how much he got worked last year? You know, as far as how many touches he got, all of that. So I think it has to be Derrick Henry.
Defensive player of the year at the midway point.
Okay. I'm going with TJ Watt.
Oh, I like it.
Here's why. Miles has kind of tailed off a little bit. He was a favorite early. Aaron Donald's up there. I know he's the betting favorite right now. But as the season goes on, who makes plays for the undefeated team left over? And it's TJ Watt.
Yeah.
That is what I think ultimately helps in this situation. When you are on a team that is winning, you're going to be in the spotlight. All eyeballs are going to be on you. When are the Steelers going to lose? All that. If you keep making plays, TJ, it's going to be yours.
Yeah. I go Miles because I think he's forced more turnovers than several teams. He is on pace for more turnovers created. In fact, his number right now is better than who led the league in that category all of last season. And without him, I don't know where they are because he's strip sack fumbled 5 times. Like, they are nowhere without that kid. They needed every one of them. But I like TJ and obviously Aaron Donald's in a category of himself. MVP of the league.
MVP of the league. I got Russell Wilson.
They're letting him cook.
Yep.
Yeah, he's it, and I think he'll end up winning it by the time this thing is over. This is a little more interesting one. How many true Super Bowl contenders are there?
I'll name them. I got three from the AFC, three from the NFC, and you tell me if I'm an idiot or if I'm missing some.
I would never do that. I would never do that.
Oh, well, I mean, Shelley would.
I'm not Cersei.
Seahawks, Packers, yep. Buccaneers in the NFC. I do not think the Saints are one.
I agree.
Steelers, Ravens, Chiefs. And I struggled with the Ravens because I don't have a good vibe about them, but I still know what they can be as far as running the football. Like, Lamar can still have that Kaepernick versus the Packers type game in the playoffs and wow you. So those are my six teams.
So the Baltimore
struggle
can still,
with the Titans. Too.
So I would add Tennessee. I had seven. I put Tennessee in this as well. Baltimore can do. Here's the thing that's interesting. Tennessee can win a lot of ways. They can win throwing it, and they can win running it. Baltimore has to win one way. But the way they win is as dominant as the way any team can win. So if they are able to get ahead, they will be able to choke out games. And I think their defense is going to get better and better as it goes along. So I'm with you on Baltimore, and I would add Tennessee in. I can't see anybody other than those seven. I really can't. I don't see anybody coming from the NFC from anywhere. The injuries to the Niners are just far too many. I don't trust Goff or not. Kyler's not ready. And I'm with you on the Saints. I'm with you on the Saints. I just think that their chances were in the past. And they had them. They had teams, you know, championship games at their place and couldn't get it done. And so I feel like the window has closed on them. All right, coming up next, we take a look at the Big Ten slate for the weekend and a monster game for the Michigan program and also the Indiana program as those two teams hook up in Bloomington. You have that to look forward to, which is nice. You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Your home of the Buckeyes, Jackets, NFL, Major League Baseball, and pretty much everything you can shake a stick at.
What? It's a saying.
The Fan. D, drinking responsibly with a touch of class. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, I'm looking at this Big Ten slate. I'm going to give you three coaches. You rank them in terms of which game, which the importance of the game to them. All right.
Okay.
Harbaugh at Indiana.
Okay.
Frost at Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
Or Locksley at Penn State. Mm. Not that he has to win, but we know what happened a year ago.
Mm. Okay. You could have went Franklin against Maryland.
But I don't think he's on any sort of hot seat.
No, but I feel like he might be realizing he can't compete, and maybe I go to Texas.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe I can compete there.
Well, that's one, maybe be Urban's offensive coordinator at Texas.
Assuming as Captain Urban says no.
too easy.
It's so too easy. It really is. I mean, it's funny because it's true. I have no information at all. All I know is that it's funny when you dive into that deep wormhole of that, right? When you go on the internet, Google Urban Meyer to Texas, and you'll find a whole bunch of fun rumors of, I know I talked to some booster down here, and he said that he talked to Urban, you know, firsthand, gave him his word. All right.
Well, the reason you have those conversations is because it's one of the jobs that you'd have to consider if they called.
Absolutely.
They have the money.
Absolutely.
It's a Cadillac job. He can recruit Texas. All
no
of those
doubt.
Things. Good place to live.
No doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it would check every box.
Gosh, maybe I should coach linebackers at Texas. I don't know.
You
I like
don't want
you
him
too
yelling
much.
At you.
I like
your I like where you are right now. I don't need you anywhere else.
They have a lot better access to Longhorns. I'll tell you that.
They do. They do.
Might be better for my life. Anyway.
Little Bevo offspring.
Oh, man. Okay. To answer your question, Scott Frost is number one. Two is Jim Harbaugh. Three is Locksley. Okay, so why do I put Locksley at three? I'm not sure really anybody has expectations for Maryland, but they need to be competitive. But I'm just not sure people are really paying attention to Locksley at Maryland. I don't know. Harbaugh's at two. I struggle with him and Frost. I think it's more important for Frost because Harbaugh's on the tail end of his experiment there. Frost is still in the. Frost still has the juice. But if Frost doesn't beat Northwestern this year, after having a bye week to prepare for Northwestern, I said it yesterday, I'll say it again, poor Northwestern has to face two teams that, because of Wisconsin backing out, that are going to have bye weeks, 2 weeks to prepare for them. So that stinks for Fitz. But Scott needs to, like, if you lose to Northwestern this weekend, how are you telling your guys that you're on your way? How are you telling your fan base that you're on your way? We understand that Northwestern might have a good football team, Peyton Ramsey, all that, but you're Nebraska. You're supposed to be the brand of the West.
Yep.
So does he start to lose his fire? Does he start to lose his juice? Look, I mean, Harbaugh's fire and juice for the job early on was awesome, and then he got it beat out of him. This feels like an early game that does it get beat out of Scott? I don't know, man. It just feels like this is a big one for them. Even though it won't look like a big one because Northwestern's not ranked and all that, behind the scenes, you know this is a big one.
I agree. I think you had the order right. I think Scott really needs to beat Northwestern. Not that he's going to get fired if he doesn't, but for himself, for the program. I think they're better, too. I do.
Yes.
I think it stinks that their safeties are going to miss those, you know, the half because of what happened in our game with the targeting. So I think that's
They couldn't have missed the fake half, the half they were supposed to miss against Wisconsin.
Right. They should say that. Look, hey, we were here to play. It's not our fault.
Just like targeting in a bowl game keeps you out of the next year's first game. Dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's critical for him to beat Northwestern. I think for Harbaugh, I'm with you. It feels cooked. I think it's actually bigger for Allen to stack a win, to beat Penn State and Michigan.
In
you want to talk
year?
About creating some momentum in the same year?
Yeah.
That would go a long way for him. I don't know even if do Michigan
people
set up,
would set up our matchup as a barn burner. Heck, ESPN might put it at night.
Big dude kick, 8 o'clock. One of the two.
It was a big dude kick the year before because it was the opener. Remember that?
Yeah, I do. I just wonder. It's hard for me to see. I don't know the psyche of the Michigan fan. Like, have they just pushed in the chips on the season?
They should.
Just apathy. Just like, you know, whatever. When's basketball start? Juwan's got another 5-star coming in. That's the way that feels to me. And for Penn State, Maryland, the only reason I threw that one in there, because neither one of those guys are, there's no hot seats or anything, but they are going to be competing for the same players.
Yep, same recruits. And Penn State
and that's
ran it up on them last year.
That's
Penn
why
State
Franklin annihilates them. That's why they annihilate them because, and Franklin's always going to annihilate him because he felt like he should have had that Maryland job. So he's going to stick it to him anyway, and he knows how critical that is. And Loxley's a major recruiter, so it's Mike doesn't need to win. Penn State kind of needs to win. They're 0-2. They need to, but Maryland needs to have it be a bit of a ball game. Otherwise, it's hard to beat Penn State for recruits.
A sneaky one is can Ferentz get a win, or is he going to be 0-3 hosting Michigan State?
Tough start for them.
Yeah, and with
especially
all
with
this
his
stuff
off-season.
This offseason,
yeah.
You never know. You never know.
This
you
is
start
0-3,
it's one of those like, oh, man, that's just leaves a bad taste in your mouth coming off all the stuff in the offseason, and it's going to make people around there who probably have already whispered, is it time for – it's never easy. You were around Bowden. It's never easy when you have a guy who's been there forever.
It's hard, really hard.
And you're trying to think of, like, is there a better option? Are we looking, is the grass not always greener, or is it? How do we handle this?
The other thing that is really, that I'm guessing, and I don't have any on-the-ground knowledge of Iowa, but this would be my guess, is that Ferentz wanted to hand this job to his kid. That's my guess, because that's
what happened at Kansas State.
They tried to do that at Kansas State.
They wouldn't let it happen.
They tried to do it at Florida State, and it's what Bobby wanted to do was to hand it to one of his kids. And what happens with that is you start to lose grip on the program because the kid is not as competent as you are, and so inevitably. And so what starts to happen is the program starts to slip, and then it gets really ugly. And you could see that happening at Iowa. Ferentz is at no point near the age or anything that Bowden was when he was finally forced out at Florida State, but. You could see that happening at Iowa. You really could. A busy day in the college football slate as well. We are reintroduced to the Pac-12 conference this weekend, at least some of their games. We will get you a preview of what to come, including a fun Friday nighter. Now, I will see a quarter of it because it doesn't start until 9:45, but kind of a fun Friday nighter for you as well. We'll take a look at the college football slate coming up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Morning Juice with Beamer, Carpenter, and Schlags. Wake up with three large dudes. Beefy.
Weekdays starting at 6.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
It's First Friday Somewhere.
That's a big sense of freedom.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Week 10. Can you believe that? For some? I don't know who. Week 10 in college football for some.
No, it's week 3.
Week 3 for us, certainly.
I totally reject that notion.
I don't have a problem with that either. I think there are, we did the Big Ten slate, I think there are three really interesting games. I think BYU at Boise State tonight is really interesting. Mm. BYU's impressive when I've seen them. They're really physical. They fly. They got a good quarterback. Interested to see that game, at least a quarter of it. 9:45 start is not great for Uncle Bo. The other one, of course, we spent time on yesterday was Clemson at Notre Dame, and then Florida and Georgia also. You're not going to be able to see Clemson at Notre Dame because you'll be calling our game. But you'll be able to peek in on these others. Among those and the rest of the slate, what jumps out to you?
Well, for the Fighting Fickles, I think that you want Boise State to win tonight because, according to the College Football Index playoff predictor or whatever, BYU has an easier path. So all of those things that we were hoping for the Fighting Fickles, I guess that's a something to look forward to tonight. I will not be watching it with my eyeballs because my eyeballs will be staring at their lids. I think, you know, honestly, Florida-Georgia is another one, right? It's one of those games where you feel like it's an elimination game. Yep. So,
no question.
You know, how do you look at that as I roll through the schedule? I really am looking forward to Michigan-Indiana. I am. I just, for obvious reasons. But that's really it. How about Liberty cracking the top 25, by the way?
Yeah. Hugh Freeze,
just sneaking in there.
The irony of him coaching there is not lost, nor should it be lost on you.
No.
In terms of that setup, I'll tell you a couple of things that you mentioned. In terms of big picture, the team that has the most to gain this weekend is Notre Dame. They definitely have the most to gain. Notre Dame with a win, it legitimizes them. And there will be some who will say, yeah, Trevor Lawrence didn't play. You know, it was DJ Uiagalelei. Okay, fine. That's fine. But it's not like that DJ kid's not going to be an NFL quarterback. Like, that's common.
I think it's going to be a lot of people, buddy.
There will be.
I can just see
if they can
Pollock,
win.
I can see Dez.
Well, those
I can
guys
see
will
all
be.
Those guys
yeah,
for
that's
sure.
Fine. That's fine. But I think people who pay really close attention to college football, if Notre Dame can hang in the trenches, if they can make plays on the outside, if they can have established run, if Book can make plays against Clemson, if they can play a good game against, and maybe even upset them, it's only a 5-point spread. If Notre Dame can upset them, I think it carries real value for them. I do.
Yes.
I think it really matters for them and their program to beat Clemson at their place. The other two games that are similar to this that I'm reminded of, and it would definitely feel like this way if Lawrence was playing, and if there were fans, of course, are the Bush-Push game with USC and the Florida State game in 93, where the number one team in the country comes in. I remember barely the Catholic Convicts games in the late 80s, not much of those, but certainly remember those games vividly, the ones I just mentioned, and it would have that feel. Some of it's off because of Lawrence, but there's still a lot to gain for Notre Dame. From a long-term program build standpoint, I think the most important game is Florida-Georgia. Because what that is a street fight. They recruit the same kids. Florida and Georgia recruit the same kids. That is for the next few recruiting classes. Who is in charge of the SEC East? Who is going? There is so much talent on the north border of Florida in the Jacksonville, all the way across the Panhandle to Pensacola, Tallahassee, all that area. There is so much talent there, and there is so much talent in South Georgia between Valdosta and Thomasville and Moultrie. Those places where people up here, you probably never heard of them, but they're dripping with talent, and it's a street fight for that talent that'll take place in Jacksonville. And Kirby Smart has recruited like a madman at Georgia. He has. You watch him play, you see it. You see it in the trenches. You see it at linebacker. You see it at corner, receiver, everywhere. Running back especially. They have. They've recruited like crazy there. But he has not been able to get all the way home.
Yeah, it's
He's not been able to get all the way home. In the meantime, Dan Mullen at Florida, early on in the tenure, not quite the recruiter Kirby is, but if he can beat Georgia, boy, does that start changing a lot of people's minds. Now, all of a sudden, as Miami flounders, Florida State's going nowhere. Now, all of a sudden, University of Florida, you go, wait a sec, can we now be the bullies again in the state of Florida like we had it under
Urban? Watch out, though. Miami's number 11, and they're at NC State tonight. So, I mean, that's a 7:30 kick if you want to see the U be back.
Right. No, I think I've seen them be back, and they're a long ways.
Okay.
I think they're a long ways. But the Florida-Georgia one is a bit of there's a lot of ramifications to that one. Not just for this year, because you're right, it's an elimination game, but also big picture in the East. It's hard to believe.
What has Kirby Smart done besides recruit better than Mark Richt? Because they're basically, when you look at I see the Georgia fans post this all the time, right? They compare records, they compare all that, and then it always says national titles, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just I don't know. Because you feel like if Mark Richt was the head coach, you know, and they had a playoff back then, he would have been in a lot of them.
He would have. Here's the thing that Kirby has done is he beat Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. And because we live in a playoff world, he gets a win over Oklahoma, which puts him in the national championship game, and he's a Tua Tagovailoa throw in overtime to Jerry Jeudy from winning the national title.
I'm not even sure it's the throw. It's a damn, hey, you're in cover two. Get off the hash. What are you doing? Line up. Why are you on the hash anyway?
What
to a safety.
Are you doing? Yeah.
That's right. What it is. It's not even the throw. I wouldn't even be mad at the throw. What do you think about Tua's throw? It wasn't the throw. Anyone can make that damn throw. Tell my safety to get off the hash.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's valid. But that's what he's done. Is I think the win over Oklahoma provided him just a ton of momentum because Oklahoma's winning that game, and then they couldn't keep the offense going after half, and then they ran Michelle and Chubb and were able to win that Rose Bowl eventually in overtime before losing to Alabama in the national title game. But Georgia, from a recruiting standpoint, is recruiting the way we recruit.
Yep.
They recruit the way Clemson recruits and Bama and LSU is recruiting. They're one of those teams. Florida hasn't quite got there yet under Mullen. They're not recruiting the way they recruited under Urban. He's not quite the salesman that Urban is. But if he can win on the field, then the results start to count. And frankly, Mullen kind of needs it. He's had a tough couple of weeks. I mean, he's inciting violence last time out. He's saying,
no,
I want fans
no
here. Meantime, there's COVID.
There's no proof of that.
I mean,
right?
His team shut down for 2 weeks. So in terms of kind of needing it, Mullen kind of needs it.
Yeah.
And you're right, it's an elimination game. The other one of note, boy, the rest of that, the Big 12 is completely eliminated. That's the thing that jumps at this thing is they're done. From a playoff perspective, they're done. So in terms of teams we got to worry about, well, we don't have to worry about any of them. The Fighting Fickles have to worry about. You're right. BYU, South Carolina can beat Texas A&M. That's positive. That'd be a big one. And then you keep a little bit of an eye on Stanford at Oregon and keep a little bit of an eye on USC in the Big Noon to see what they look like. Those are from the national perspective, that's kind of where you're at.
Can't wait to see Bradshaw and Howie then break that one down.
Oh, boy. Did you get any insight into why they did that?
Nope.
They're
not giving me any insight.
I'm just surprised that there hasn't been like. I mean, they say it's because of contact tracing or something, or came in contact with COVID. But
out of an
abundance, you're probably
of
right. Do it from your house is probably not possible when you're trying to do it on the fly. But you'd almost would rather have just punted on it entirely. Which the idea that how. I mean, you saw them last night. They're doing NFL games now. They're supposed to be knowing college football. They're going to talk eloquently about USC and Arizona State.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it's us in the Big Noon. That'd be easy.
Right.
You know, us against Penn State in Big Noon. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I can talk about that. Ohio State, Michigan, the history, all that. What the heck are they going to know about USC and Arizona State?
Right.
It's a tough sell, man. We hit Thing or Not a Thing up next. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Proud to be your flagship home for Ohio State athletics. The Jackets, Crew Soccer, and Bobby Carpenter's uncomfortably vascular arms. The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Two men complaining about first world problems.
You're not getting the point, kid.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a football Friday. Bodie's here. Go, Bodie.
Bishop and Laurinaitis. Thing or not a thing.
All right, guys, let's do it on a Friday. First up, last night's game between the Packers and the 49ers was the 26th straight meeting between the two teams that involved at least one future/former MVP-winning quarterback. The last time the two teams met without an MVP quarterback playing in the game was 1986. Thing or not a thing?
I mean, it seems like on the surface it should be a thing. But isn't it really just because the Packers went from Rodgers or from Favre to Rodgers? And the 49ers went from Young or Montana to Young. Did anybody other than those four win MVPs?
No, but I think it's quite amazing that
it is. It
just
is
the longevity
but it's
of those.
It's just right. It's pretty remarkable. It's pretty remarkable
because that'd be like saying that the Colts Patriots had that length because someone came after Brady and won an MVP.
Would have been if Luck would have won an MVP after.
But then the Patriots still would need somebody.
They would need someone to follow. Yeah.
Yes.
So basically, it's two franchises who crushed the quarterback handoff, what it is.
Yes.
Sticking with last night's game, Devontae Adams had 10 catches for 173 yards and a touchdown in Green Bay's win. Adams became the second player in NFL history with three games of 10 catches, 150 yards, and a touchdown in a single season. Megatron, Calvin Johnson for the Lions, is the only other player to do so. He did that back in 2012. Thing or not a thing?
Well, it's a big thing. It's also a thing because Green Bay decided not to address receiver. So that's the other part of it, is he is dominant, but also they didn't draft Jefferson or T. Right. Higgins. Or they drafted a quarterback. So there's Rodgers. Who's he trust?
Right.
Adams. That's and Adams it. Delivers on that trust.
Yep. And when you can lock him down, that then for Green Bay, it's then what?
Yep.
But you haven't been able to this year. Gosh, that's amazing. The second player in NFL history, yeah, that's a huge thing.
Still got the whole second half of the season to break that record, too. The NBA is now expected to return for a 72-game season beginning on December 22nd next month. With that happening, there will be just 71 days between the end of last season and the start of the next season, which is the fewest number of days between two seasons in NBA, NHL, MLB, or NFL history. Thing or not a thing?
Well, it's an enormous thing, and dollars delivered this. That's why this is happening, is because they've got to get these games in. I saw LeBron James on his show, The Shop, last week, said something to the effect of, I'm going to take the first month off, and AD can hold it down. And I think that there will be some of that. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of players.
You could if you
say, wait a second, I just played.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to run it. I don't get an offseason. I just
played. How do their contracts work then? That's my question. So, like, if you are, because I know if the NFL, like, your contracts are structured active, inactive. So you can't pull that in the league. But in the NBA, for instance, like, I understand, like, my first reaction to that is, like, that ain't fair to the fans. Well, there are going to be no fans. So, not in LA anyway. So
it's not fair to your TV partners.
It's not fair to your TV partners, which obviously they don't care about, which they should because they provide the money.
They're the only ones with giving them the money.
Yes.
The TV.
But, anyway, I just wonder how, like, if you voluntarily shut yourself down for a month, then you shouldn't get paid that month. I mean, that's
Everyone's
working through things right now. Everyone's working through things right now in a pandemic. You know, everyone's doing things they don't want to do, like parenting kids at home while also working from home and trying to get your kids through school at home.
Yep.
I mean, no one's going to feel bad. I understand you're sore. There's two sports that come to mind, the easiest to do this with. Baseball, sure. You sprint every once in a while when you have to run one out, if you want to. It's even debatable in baseball whether you want to run one out, right? So as far as the physical toll on having a short offseason, baseball and then basketball. Basketball is physical, but it's not a contact sport in the sense of those hockey dudes are healing from some real physical pain. You know, football guys are really healing from physical pain.
Yeah. Less certainly in basketball. The other thing is you have to think about, and this is less for LeBron, as he's 36 or whatever he is, but for the younger players, you have to think about the health of your sport. There's going to be a new CBA. There's going to be money coming into this league. You have to deliver on this, or there's no money. Dude, they're even talking about expansion in the NBA and NHL to make up the shortfall. So they get, you know, expansion fees out of the gate so they can make up the money.
NBA Nashville?
Could be. NBA and Seattle's most likely. Seattle and Vegas are most likely.
Yeah.
Vegas.
For the NBA.
Chris Holtman's Buckeyes got some good news yesterday as guard Jimmy Sotos was granted immediate eligibility for this upcoming basketball season. The Buck now transferred averaged 11 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists last season for the Bison. Thing or not a thing?
Huge thing. It's a huge thing. And it's the way it should have been. I mean, the idea that this was going to be denied, of course they were going to let him play. We were outraged when they said he couldn't play. Now he can. That's good. He's going to be a big part of this team.
Yeah. And look, I give Chops credit, all right? I was listening to him by mistake, not intentionally.
Sorry.
By mistake. I turn my car on and I'm listening to Common Man. I'm like, oh, this feels like a warm blanket. This will be something funny. And then Chops started talking. And I was like, oh, gosh, how do I change it? Anyway, but he said they were talking about this subject. And he said that, look, if they said no, then we need to adopt the SEC rule. Just say, no, I don't think we listened to you. Jimmy's playing. Sorry. Stop.
Wonder where he got that.
You?
Idea. I wonder where that came from.
And he gave you no credit.
Is that what he's doing? He's just parroting? He's just parroting all of our original ideas on other shows?
And he gave you no credit.
Of course. It's an original thought out of him.
Yep.
We'll do know the scores next segment, but looking ahead to this weekend's point spreads, Michigan is a 3.5-point favorite over Indiana tomorrow. That is the first time since 1988 that Michigan is less than a 7-point favorite over the Hoosiers. Thing or not a thing?
I mean, of all the thing or not a things, this is the biggest one. Because it tells you where they are. Yeah, it tells you where Michigan is.
Yep.
And we're to be credit to Tom Allen, where that program, he's done a nice job.
Doug was talking about who's, you know, we want to be the battle to be the fourth team in the East. No, you want to be the battle to be the third, because I think Michigan is opening the door.
I agree.
Indiana could be the third team in the East this year.
Jeez.
Or second. Think, yeah. Let that sink in. I don't think they'll consistently beat Penn State. But they've beaten Penn State. Does anything tell you they won't beat Michigan State? They get only a 3.5 dog against Michigan at home. I don't know, man.
Last one here real quick. The Pac-12 begins their football season tomorrow with number 20 USC hosting Arizona State at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. local time for them out west. That is the earliest kickoff time for a USC home game in the last 65 seasons. Thing or not a thing?
What were they playing, like 7 a.m. games 70 years ago?
Why? Maybe.
What was
this? They want to get to the beach, bro. Let's get the game out of the way. Nobody and let's go there. Surfing.
They're all done by 3 o'clock. Nobody works past 3
perfect.
O'clock out west.
I love it.
It's perfect.
I love it.
It's
perfect.
Look, it tells you, A, where USC is, and B, where the Pac-12 is, that they had to do this.
Yes.
Because there's no way you do this during the Bush Liner USC.
No.
We're not playing at noon.
Nope.
Bush Liner USC, no chance. But it's how far the Pac-12's fallen and how far USC's fallen.
Yep. But good for them for trying to be creative, trying to find a way to get in front of eyeballs, not just sitting there and taking it. So I like that. I like it. A little fight back out of the Pac-12. Try to figure out a way to get in front of people's televisions. Not sure it'll work because you won't have Urban and them leading into it, but
absolutely not. All right, we go Know the Scores coming up next. You listen to Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
Two men, no pants.
Oh my God!
Common Man and T-Bone.
Weekday afternoons from 3 to 6.
The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
A linebacker
and a man of leisure.
This doesn't even make sense.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, final hour here on a Football Friday. Take a look at that Buckeye defense against the Rutgers offense coming up. Tim May at the bottom of the hour as well. Before we do all of that, though, it is time to know the scores. Hit it, Boat.
It's time for Know the Scores on Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, guys. Not a bad week last week. Not a great week either one. Just okay. Bo, you went 6-4. James 5-5 on the season. Bo, you are 6 over at 43.
Hold on, it says 4-6 for Bo.
Yeah, there was we got that
some
correct.
Accounting some irregularities.
Bad. Okay,
coach. Poor man.
Okay, you know what? This whole thing's a wash then, because here's the issue: I never double check. So you mean to tell me that moron Chops hasn't screwed up once?
That's why I check.
So see, that's why you know what? Look. I never have checked all year, so I'm going to say this whole 30. You know what? Recount. I need a recount. This whole thing is a fraud.
Wait, just stop counting. Stop the counting. It's done. I win. It's all done. No more. We're not picking any more games. I win. Stop. Stop right
ridiculous.
Now.
This is ridiculous.
So I had BC covering last week. One. I had Cincinnati covering. I had Michigan State covering. I had Texas. I had Bama. And I had Ohio State. So those are your
six. I had a whole layer of trust, right? I don't look at these at all once I do them. The only ones that I keep are the NFL ones, and it's by luck, because the NFL ones just kind of are, when I take it from the email and I load it into my pages on my iPad, it saves automatically, and I don't delete it, but I delete all our rundowns, which is what these are in. So if these were on a separate sheet, like the NFL ones, maybe I'd keep them and double check. But I double check the NFL, but I do never check these, and now I'm starting to wonder
you gotta be
that
paying
31
attention.
And 49. Is it some?
You gotta watch these
bull
kids,
crap.
I can't speak to the 31-49, but as God is my witness, I'm looking at the sheet from last week, James, and I have you at 5-5.
Yep.
So unless I'm terrible at math,
Bo's a good kid. He's not Chops.
No, it's fake news. Fake
he
news.
He can't speak to what happened beforehand.
Nope.
You gotta trust the process. We live in a democracy.
Nope.
Count every score.
First up, number 9 BYU is a 3.5 point favorite at number 21 Boise State.
I think BYU is really good. I think they're really good. I think they have the physicality to hang with some of the better teams. I think they have the quarterback in Wilson. I will watch some of this tonight. I'll see how they come out tonight. I think Boise State, they also had an interesting thing with their quarterback. Bachmeier missed a game last week, so what's the status there in terms of everything being all on the same page? Give me BYU 31, Boise State 21.
I like that pick. I think BYU's for real, too. I think they got a nice quarterback. I think they've been one of these programs. Just it's like, look, we'll play anybody this year. Let's go. Let's sign us up. Independent. They'll go out there and play. And I like the team that they have. They play hard. They're tough. I think they're deserving of being in the top 10. I think that they'll win this football game by 10 as well. So give me the Cougars.
Next up, Nebraska's at Northwestern, and the Wildcats are favored by 3.5.
I don't know whether this pick is emotional, if it's more of a want-to than logical, but I think that after rewatching Ohio State and Nebraska, I think Nebraska has something. And I think that they'll win a tight football game on the road in Chicago. I think Adrian Martinez and McCaffrey scramble all over the place. It's not pretty, but I think the Cornhuskers beat the Wildcats.
All right, I got 2 weeks to prepare if I'm Scott Frost, right? You got 2 weeks to prepare. I got two kids who can run it and throw it, so I can do a lot of trickeration. I can do those things. I've got some players. Wandale Robinson, we can get him going a little bit. And maybe I'm talking myself into this. Maybe just because I want Nebraska to be good.
Same thing.
But they don't even really have to win. All they have to do is lose by a field goal, and you're still fine. So give me Nebraska 24, Northwestern 23.
Number 23, Michigan is on the road. They're in a they are a 3.5-point favorite at number 13, Indiana.
I look at this, and I say, why? Why is Michigan favored? They're going to Indiana. Why? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. And I've looked around. I've heard people talk about, I mean, Indiana's beaten Penn State. The mighty Hoosiers, Tom Allen's team, they've beaten Penn State. What do you want out of them? And then in the back of my head, I think to myself, is Harbaugh really going to lose to Indiana? Two? Is this where we're at Michigan? And maybe I'll be wrong and I'll live to regret this. Michigan, 27. Indiana, 23.
The Hoosiers are going to beat the Wolverines.
Jeez.
Who's going to get open for Michigan?
Dark days, Big Blue. Dark days.
Who's going to get open for Michigan? Can you throw the ball downfield? You couldn't last week.
No.
You couldn't against Michigan State, a team that lost to Rutgers.
Right. Yep.
All you can do is run the football and hope Joe Milton does quick passes and you break, you know, tackles. That's your offense. Now, if Michael Penix isn't screwed up by, you know, and Indiana isn't screwed up by having Don Brown's defense, you know, blitzing right and left and all that and attacking.
Can Penix make
give me the
throws?
Hoosiers. Hoosiers win by a field goal. Walk off. Win the game. End of it. Hoosiers.
Next up, Maryland is at Penn State, and the Nittany Lions are favored by 25.
Okay. I struggled with this one, too. I'm not going to be fooled by Tolulia. I got to get this name down by next week.
Yeah, but you have a week.
Tolia Tagovailoa. All right?
Yeah.
That sounded right.
Yep.
Tolia Tagovailoa.
Yep.
Had a great comeback game against Minnesota. But I think we've understood that Minnesota's defense is hot garbage. So Penn State's defense, although it cannot compete with us, I don't think is hot garbage. I think that Franklin has those boys ready to roll. I think Shaka Toney and those guys are embarrassed with the way they are shut down against O-State. Penn State wins by 28.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think it's a little bit of a mirage with Maryland last week, and I think Minnesota's really, really bad. Conversely, I actually was impressed with Penn State's give a damn in the second half of that game last week.
Yeah.
And the way they were able to throw the ball and get it going. I mean, Clifford kind of got it going. They were able to make some plays. That kid made two great plays on Wade on the outside. So it's you see 25 and you go, geez, that's a lot. But if it's 38-10, you're safe, pal. And it,
well, it's not
or even
as big
if it's
what, 45 38?
And 45.
What's ours?
And, yeah, ours is even bigger. I'll go Penn State 41. Maryland 14.
First Pac-12 game of the season, Arizona State is at number 20, USC, and Southern Cal is favored by 10.5.
It's just the number is too big. USC can win the game, but Herm's recruited at a nice level there. He's got some playmakers on the outside, a quarterback who can play a little bit, and the idea that USC is that much better than anybody right now, and they floundered out of the gates early. I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona State won, but I don't need him to win. I just need him to be within 10.5. So give me USC winning this one 24-14.
Yeah, man. ASU have that young quarterback, right, that can scramble around. Remember when he upset Michigan State up there?
I do.
I like the fact of him keeping them in football games. I think Herm's done a phenomenal job. I did not have that, him going back to college. He's got an all-NFL staff, it looks like, with Antonio Pierce at LBs and Kevin Mawai at O-line and stuff like that.
If he called you right now and said, will you coach my linebackers for $500,000 a year, you'd have to say yes.
No, I'd be there in a second.
Wouldn't you be there in a second?
I'd be there in a second. If Urban Meyer called me and asked me to go down to Austin, Texas, I'd think about it.
He'd yell at me.
I'd look damn good in burnt orange and white. What are you talking about?
But I don't. But I don't yell at you. Urban would yell at you.
I don't care. You can yell at me all you want.
I think Herb's going to yell at you. I'm comfortable
in my skin. I know what I am.
Herm, you're going to have the time of your life with Herm.
Yeah. Look,
you guys have the best
same thing. I could go down 71 South to Cincinnati, and Luke would yell at me. I mean, Marcus goes, the way he talks to me, like we're still, he goes, I want to say to him sometimes, like, bro, I'm not playing for you. You know, like, this is. Look, ASU covers. All right. USC wins the football game, but they win it by a field goal.
The world's largest cocktail party. Number 8 Florida against number 5 Georgia.
Pack
and
it.
The Bulldogs
pack
are
the stadium
by 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to see in Florida.
Yep.
No
or
pandemic
Georgia.
There.
Yep. Or Georgia.
Both
look,
states,
I, look with both these teams being somewhat, Georgia's recruited better, okay? But with these talent levels kind of being, as Ryan says, as talent equates, I tend to go with the quarterback. And I just trust Florida's guy.
Trask
more than yeah. the walk-on they got at Georgia, it seems like. And I just, look, I do. And so for that reason alone, I'm going with the Gators. I think this is the shift in the SEC East.
Yeah, I echo that. And I think the one, if you're looking for something in Kirby Smart that you would have to question, it is his incredible conservative nature when it comes to quarterbacks. So yeah. He had a football Ferrari on the bench in Justin Fields,
mm-hmm.
and he stayed with Jake Fromm because Jake Fromm was the known commodity.
Yeah.
He's playing this Stetson Bennett kid who the ceiling is nowhere. There's no ceiling. He's so limited. We saw it against Alabama. We've seen it in their other games. Meantime, Florida's got Trask, and they got that tight end who's going to be a first-round pick. So give me the Gators to take care of business. I think it'd be a good game, 34-28.
Houston is at number 6. Cincinnati and the Bearcats are favored by 13.5.
It's a big number. It's a big number. But I also think that Luke's got a really good team. And I think the other thing he has is knowledge. And the knowledge of we're 6th in the country. If we keep beating people 41-14, and I don't think Innis kids would have any trouble staying focused. If we keep beating people the way we've been beating people, we got a shot here at this thing. And those things only come around once in a lifetime, maybe, at Cincinnati. So I think they do take care of business. I think they win it 35-14.
Same. I'm never betting against Luke Fickell again.
Done with it.
I'm done with it. So I agreed. I think that Luke Fickell and those boys go, you know, take care of business at home. And look, they've already had to postpone a game due to COVID. So they know how fragile this thing is. I don't think that they're going to overlook anybody. I think the Bearcats will win by 21.
Number 7, Texas A&M is a 10-point favorite at South Carolina.
I struggled with this one, Bo, because there's something that I want to happen with the Fighting Fickells. And then there's a belief that A&M has dudes. And I know South Carolina has talent as well, but I think A&M's better. It scares me that they're going to be the team sitting there in the West with one loss and sneak into that number 4 and keep Cincinnati at like number 5 or 6, right? I could just see it. A&M 4 in the college football playoff, BYU 5, Cincinnati 6. Anyway, the Aggies win. And the Aggies win by 2 touchdowns.
All right, you tell me if you can make any stinking sense of this. South Carolina lost to Tennessee by 4. Okay, that makes sense. They lost to Florida by 14. Okay, that makes sense. They beat the brakes off of Vandy 41-7. That makes sense. Then they beat Auburn 30-22. Then they get housed to LSU, who's not housing anybody, 52-24.
Right.
You make sense of that. I think that the Texas A&M is they know. I think Jimbo knows. And I don't think he's in an elite level of coach, but I think he's a pretty good program builder. I think they've got good talent, and I think they know the opportunity in front of them, and I do think they take advantage of that. Give me Texas A&M 31-17.
Here we go, baby. This is it. I have been waiting for this game my entire life. This is the one. This is number one Clemson.
How do you see it? boat?
Oh, God.
He's like, don't make me verbally say what I feel about this game. Don't make my brain come into the equation is what he just said.
My heart over my head. I'm taking the Irish by a point, 24-23. Number one, Clemson heads up to South Bend. They are a five-point favorite on the road against number four, Notre Dame.
Fight for old Notre Dame.
What though the odds? Be great or small?
All right, look, it's five. I saw that the Clemson secondary can be victimized. I saw with my own eyes that you can score points on them. And I think Notre Dame plays this one close. I do. I think they're prepared. They've been preparing this for a long time. I don't know if they'll win, but they don't have to. So give me Clemson, 35-31.
That's amazing because I was thinking the exact same thing. I think Clemson wins a really good football game on a last-second field goal, and you can chalk it up to just championship pedigree, right? Finding a way to win, to steal one on the road. I'm sorry, Bodes. 34-31, the Tigers. It pains me. It pains me because I told you I wanted to be a Fighting Irish coming out. Mickey Marotti said I was too slow. Wouldn't be able to play college football.
Jeez. Can't play.
He was the one that worked me out at the one-day tryout my junior year. It was Mick.
Too slow. Can't play at Notre Dame.
No, hey, this kid can't play. This kid can't play. He goes, and then I saw you in the national title 2 years, you know, back in 06, 2 years later, and I was like, "Puh, get out of here." This dude?
Jeez.
I love Notre Dame, man. It was the same colors as my high school. I was like, yes, let's go.
Yeah.
Play a champion today. Them. You know,
I would not be surprised if they pulled it off. I hope so. I think it'd be a fun game. Looking forward to that one and bouncing back between that one and ours.
No, I'm really glad it didn't work out, by the way.
Yeah, it worked out well for you. Yeah, I don't know that. Well, first of all, I mean, let's just say somehow miraculously you met Cersei out of being at Ohio State. I can't imagine her being like, I can't wait to spend the rest of my life in South Bend. Like, there's just, I don't know that that's going to happen.
True.
I think that's a tougher sell.
Although I am surprised that she has wanted to stay in Ohio.
The clock's ticking on that.
Yeah.
So it could change at any moment.
It could.
Let's see how she feels about it at the end of February. Then it might be, you know what?
You know
a little
what?
More warmth, a little more sun might be a win. All right, we'll get you set for our game up next. Our defense against the Rutgers offense. Therese has been studying the film on this. What does he see in our defense that he likes? What needs to be worked on over the course of the next couple of weeks and starting tomorrow against Rutgers? It's a Football Friday here on The Fan.
The offseason is a myth. Serving you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to feed your sports addiction. The Fan, Ohio sports destiny. A show that knows its limitations.
Still learn to control that.
You're listening to Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan. And let me talk to you about my friends at Affinity Whole Health. Look, if you want to know, knowledge is power, baby. If you want to know what your numbers are for, gosh, a whole wide range of things, cholesterol, testosterone, my goodness, where you are and all the little details of your blood work, I think it's beneficial. I try to check mine once a year at least, and I think if you go in and you know where am I at, maybe I've had a little decrease in energy, my want to isn't there, decrease in libido, gosh, I'm getting old. Could it be low testosterone? Well, if any whole health can check it, and they can help you out. Go to feelgreatcolumbus.com and take advantage of that free doctor consult today.
All right, you've taken a look at this Buckeye defense and the Rutgers offense. If you were the offensive coordinator at Rutgers, how would you attack? What would your game plan be against this Buckeye defense?
Oh, gosh.
not easy.
Not easy at all. Not easy at all. It's going to be tough sledding. There's really no way to kind of get around it. Screen early. Know that they're going to be coming off the ball. They're going to be flying. So how can we screen them? You know, early on and try to get them to slow down in the pass rush. I don't think it's going to help much, but I think that's what you would try to do, right? That's the tough thing there is really trying to how do you find yards. Can you do some trick plays, right? They've been putting in last year's quarterback, Johnny Langan, at kind of this like wildcat-type package, and he caught his first pass of the year against Indiana, and he's also threw kind of one bubble route. But when you have a former quarterback running that, right, And he's not like a high school dude. Like, the dude's starting quarterback last year. So, you know, your antenna has to go up to know, okay, they have some trick off of this, right? That's the only thing is tricks. There's really nobody as far as matchup. Isaiah Pacheco's nice at tailback. You know, the Bo Melton on a wideout was a former four-star wide receiver. That's why he was so highly touted and a bunch of attention on him the last few years. You've done games of theirs because he's one of the few four-stars on their roster, which you really get an idea. So when you prep for a game, right, I take the game notes, I take the film, I take all the information, and then I usually go through the roster on the team's websites, and I go through every player that's in the 2-deep. And for this week for Ohio State, I went to the 4-deep of everybody because you want to respect who's going to get in the game and you want to read up on them and make a little note here or there. And what I've gathered is when you go through Rutgers' roster, it was an eye-opener if you saw a 4-star. And you're like, oh, gosh, let me highlight this guy on the board. When you went through Ohio State's, it was an eye-opener if you saw a 3-star.
Yeah.
And that's the main difference. As you've studied rosters now, as I've gone through Purdue, as I've gone through Illinois, even going through Wisconsin, you don't truly grasp the depth of Ohio State's talent until you go through and you see consensus 4-star, consensus 4-star, consensus top 100 player, top 100 player, top 100 player. And then you realize how many other schools around our conference don't have one top 100 player. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, okay.
It.
That makes sense,
right? Like, yeah,
it's recruiting's everything.
Yeah,
but we take it for granted because when we see those classes, like we're thinking that like it's going to be tough sledding for Rutgers offense. That's the one area that they're still lagging behind. If they're going to score at all, it's going to have to be one of our mistakes, right? Fumble on a kick return, fumble by on an exchange, fumble backed up, something like that. It's fourth down and four on our own 45, and we're trying to go for it, and it's a bad snap, and we have to just fall on it, right? It's
gimmick
a short
stuff.
Field. And so yeah. we're too disciplined and we're too talented to allow explosive plays this season. That's, you know, so it's going to be tough sledding. Noah Vedral, their quarterback, stares down his wide receivers. You know, that's why he threw picks against Indiana. He's, you know, he predetermines where he wants to go and he stares. Now, he does have the legs to make stuff happen. He was recruited by Frost at UCF and he was, you know, with the Frost at Nebraska. He started two games for Nebraska last year. He has the running ability, but that's not what they're going to major in. The hard thing for Rutgers, too, is they want to go tempo. You know, that's the Oklahoma State theory. We want to go tempo, but when you have that talent, you don't want to tempo three and out all game long either, right? So it's tough.
That's the hard thing is most of these teams now do go tempo, so you can't sustain – you're not going to be able to eat clock to sustain drives because they want to do what they are. But what they are feeds right into what we do well, which feeds right into our offense having the ball back, which feeds right into your back playing tempo. Meantime, your defense spends the whole game on the field, and it's just a vicious cycle that just keeps going and going and going and no real end to it. So it's a tough – this is tough. And to me, like, unless you have a star quarterback – and or stud receivers who can just change games on their own or just an ability to bleed clock and be very effective in the run game. But these teams that we're playing right now just don't possess those type of things. So it's going to be
– No, they don't. Tough. And our defense – look, our defense is extremely strong up the middle between Togiai and Garrett. Vincent coming back. People forget he was a 5-star cat coming out. We're so strong up the middle. I'm going to try to have a little fun tomorrow night and kind of do a little Where's Baron kind of thing, you know, and circle where he's at because he lines up, you know, stacked. He lines up with Taraja Mitchell. He was on the kind of those two were in almost like an eagle front, a three down front with Baron on one side and Mitchell on the other side. And one would blitz, one would drop. And so he's used as a rusher. He's used out in man coverage. And so, you know, kind of highlighting his versatility. I think Pete Warner just plays fast. He plays fast. It's not always perfect, but he plays just 100 miles per hour. So it's exciting. I'm excited to see more of Proctor. And who's going to step up? You know, Williamson has been kind of working in the slot a whole bunch. He'll be asked to do a little bit more. There's depth issues on the back end. Sean Wade got beat, you know, on the two really great catches by Dotson. But then on the slant, there's a couple slants in that game, too, where you're kind of like, all right, You just got beat off the line. You know, you missed a jam on the one. I'm excited to see how you won't really know how he rebounds, right? Because he could sleepwalk through this game, quite frankly, and play fine. But for him, you know, there's got to be a real urgency. You're running out of times that you could put on the scarlet and gray uniform to go out there and make a memorable play. The hard thing is that even if you make get a pick six or something like that, like no one's, you know, outside of Buckeye Nation is going to be really eyes on that. So there's stuff to improve on, but I really am confident in our defense.
Yep, I would be too, certainly for the rest of the games on the regular season schedule. Tim May, Letterman Row, right here at the Fan, will join us coming up next, as he often does. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on the Fan.
1, 2, 3!
The Daily Coach Ryan Day Show is brought to you locally by Credit Union of Ohio and by Hyde Park Prime Steakhouse on the Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
This is the Daily Show with Coach Ryan Day, brought to you by Safe Light Auto Glass. Your tight ends and the way they produced this past week, and just when you look at them in general, is that a position group, Ryan, that just has to exercise patience and be ready for their opportunities when they occur?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think that, you know, when you're the tight end, sometimes that ball doesn't always come your way, and that's hard, you know. And so we ask them to do a lot of things. And so it is great when they're actually able to get their hands on the ball. And we will do that some on Saturday, and we'll continue to do that as the season goes on.
Okay, we'll have another comment in just a moment.
The classiest show on this station, which isn't saying much. This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
It is a Football Friday here on the program, and on Football Fridays, we chat with Tim May, our great buddy from Letterman Row, and right here at the Fan. You'll hear him tomorrow on the pregame. Tim, thanks so much for taking the time on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. All right, these are unique times in that you're playing a completely outmanned opponent. So from your perspective, what are the little things you'll be watching for to lead you to believe that Ohio State is progressing in a manner it should to be a team that can beat Clemson and Bama in the playoff?
Well, me, Paul Spahn, Dave Holmes, and Sean Dunnigan are playing Willow Run, which is
okay.
Sort of like
Listen,
the
Tim,
Rutgers of a...
You can mention Moose all you want on this show, and I encourage it. The other two, no.
Okay. Anyway, back to what I was saying. Our foursome is playing Willow Run, which is sort of the Rutgers of the golf courses around here, and I'm still having trouble because I'm not concentrating. You know what I'm saying? So that's what could get Ohio State's way tomorrow, to take anything for granted, to maybe get out of character from an offensive standpoint. And number three, you know, we saw what happened with Michigan State. 7 turnovers, they lose to Rutgers, and then Michigan State beats Michigan. And so... You know, strange things have happened. I don't know if stranger things have happened, but strange things have happened. And so that's what could get in their way.
Tim, at what point, I guess, how would you want Ryan Day to play this? Would you like to see more of the backups, the future in the second half, if the game is in hand? And then what score do you consider game in hand if you are the head ball coach?
Well, considering on LettermanRow.com, I picked Julian Fleming to be sort of a breakout guy tomorrow. I would like to see them get the backup wide receivers in there early and just throw to Julian Fleming, but I digress. I don't know. I think you always want to, as often as possible, want to try to lubricate the running game, and I thought they had great, great running game last week. You know, the first 3 plays right out of the gate or right down the field, a jet sweep, and then 2 runs from Master Teague, a third, and that pretty much answered the questions about the running game, right? So, and, you know, they were up 7-0, and Justin Fields hadn't thrown a pass. So you always want to get that going. But you know, I think both of you guys know me, man. Even when not in doubt, still air it out. Because this is a great passing offense that Ohio State has. It has the possibility of maybe being as good as has ever been at this school from the standpoint of all the threats. And that's taking in a lot. I mean, Troy Smith and those guys in the mid-2000s that you played with, and then of course Haskins and last year, but this really has the possibilities of just lighting it up, and plus I think the matchups tomorrow are favorable in that regard, but I also think the matchups are very favorable in just lining up and plowing the road, because they've got, in my opinion, one defensive lineman of repute, and the rest of them they're not bad, but I mean, I think Ohio State could dominate there.
Tim, you hit on something with airing it out. Justin Fields came. He doesn't need to be playing right now. He doesn't. He'd be the first, second quarterback off the board. You do the draft right now. He'd go number two overall. That's the way this thing would go. So he's playing. And if you're the coach, you deserve to let him play, don't you? And let him have fun. Football's fun. You want to play. That's why he came back to play. There's also a Heisman conversation that's out there that he's right in the thick of it. But in the meantime, you also, where are you at backup quarterback? I mean, we saw what happened with Mertz at Wisconsin. Like, isn't that something that has to get sorted out here relatively quickly?
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, but I'm with you. I mean, when they were up four, had 45 against Nebraska, I didn't understand why Justin Fields was going back in the game then. So I think you get, if you can get a decent lead, you get it. You get, let Justin Fields have his day in court because he deserves it. And then you go C.J. Stroud, Jack Miller, whoever that guy is, Gunnar Hoke, you get him in the game. Obviously, we saw Jack Miller go in, but as Austin Ward pointed out, there might have been a little bit of a problem with C.J. Stroud that week from a strain standpoint. But you get those guys playing, man, because like you said, look at Clemson right now. They're going to Notre Dame. You saw how they struggled last week, I thought, offensively till the second half when they really got Travis Etienne going, and that's a very talented freshman quarterback they've got. But you've got to get those guys some playing time because in this day and age, you know, Justin Hillier, you know, false positive, but he still didn't get to play last Saturday night, right? So that's what you've got to, you've always got to be preparing for that.
Tim, let's jump around the Big Ten a little bit. What's your gut feeling? And Bo put this to me, and I think it's a great one. I'm going to give you two games, and who needs it more? Does Nebraska need to beat Northwestern more, or does Michigan need to beat Indiana more?
Oh, without a doubt, Michigan needs to beat Indiana more. I think if it goes the other way, notice how somber I got there? If it goes the other way, it could really get bad up there. I mean, they went from, like, having a hootenanny after beating what we found out later was a sort of a personnel-deprived Minnesota team, which then gets beat by Maryland, to last week getting outplayed on their home field by their in-state rival. That was uninspired football. You know, well, my podcast this week, I had Kirk Herbstreit on, and we were talking about that. Just like he said, it looked like Michigan treated that as they had a practice scheduled at their own facility. He said, nah, let's just take it to the stadium. And that's kind of the way they played, you know. And meanwhile, Michigan State, under Mel Tucker, was out for bear, and they got it. So, yes, I think this is a major moment. I think the rest of the games are major moments in the Jim Harbaugh era at Michigan. Don't you guys agree?
I think he's pushing the chips, Tim.
Yeah.
I think he knows. I think you can see it in the press conferences. I think you can see it. I mean, this is not a man attacking life with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. He's not sleeping in tree forts. He knows. It's done. He did the best he could. It's not good enough. That's the way I read it. To me, he feels like a defeated man. When I see these press conferences, I just feel like a defeated man.
Well, when you switch pants, that's a harbinger. You know?
Yeah, it really is.
Something's up. You either try
so is losing Zach Harrison, and then you decide to not recruit Ohio anymore.
Yeah, but exactly. That's exactly where they've fallen short. But, I mean, when you switch pants, you're either trying to get your own self going or get your team going. But either way, you know, it didn't work last week. But, you know, I'm telling you what, though, Bo, this is a tough year to make a judgment call on any team based on one singular game, you know. And
we'll
see how they play. But, boy, Indiana, you know Indiana is feeling it right now.
Absolutely. You know, and I want to be very clear. I don't think Michigan's going to necessarily fire him. I think he could walk.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Go back to the NFL and say,
I
did the best I could. Yeah.
I don't think he perceives himself as a quitter. So that would be quitting, you know. But we all know late summer, early fall, he got sideways with his president on play or not to play. And so the heat could be coming from all kinds of burners up there.
Yeah, it really could. All right, hit him straight, buddy, and at least beat Dunnigan. It's the least you can do.
Yeah, I'm just trying not to have any football symptoms while I play today. I'm just keeping that in mind.
He is Tim May of Letterman Row and right here at the Fan. Appreciate you, Tim. And Tim joins on the Brian Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline, of course. All right, three things for a Buckeye win in our predictions. Three things we're going to look for. We know they're going to win. Three things we'll look for in our predictions coming up next on a Football Friday. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on the Fan.
All Buckeyes, all the time. The Buckeye Show.
Weeknights at 6.
Your flagship home for Ohio State athletics. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
simultaneously passing the eye test, the smell test, and the ear test.
Huge win.
That's a big win.
This is Bishop and Laurinaitis.
All right, final one here on a Football Friday. Time for three things we'll be looking for in the Buckeye win. Get a boat.
One, two, one, two.
Three things with Bishop and Laurinaitis.
Sponsored by Green & Sons, the premier Kubota dealership in Central Ohio. Located in Marysville and Mount Sterling. Visit greenandsons.com today.
Number one for me, who's the backup? Stroud or Miller? Who goes in first? Who plays better? I worry, when you think about what could derail all of this, really the only thing to me that could is pandemic. And specifically, pandemic in respect to Justin Fields. So, until we have Justin Fields in one of those Pope mobiles driving around, it's something that I worry about. Okay? So I want to know which of these two guys, and honestly, either one would probably be fine over the course of this season. But let's keep in mind that the Big Ten ruling of out 21 days would also apply, theoretically, to a playoff. So yes. I have no interest in that. So I need these two guys to get ready to go. And I think you're going to get a chance to see some extended play from both of them, probably in the fourth quarter, hopefully, on Saturday. And I'm very curious to see how Ryan Day handles it.
Yeah, I know that they're doing everything they can to protect Justin. They've kind of hinted at that. I don't know if that means like he just meets by himself with Corey Dennis and, hey, other quarterbacks, you're
can
on
you
your
imagine?
Own. I don't know what happens there. But
Hyperbaric chambers he walking around in.
My first thing I'll be looking for, Bud, is just clean. Can we play clean? No turnovers and no mental penalties. I'm okay with holdings. I'm okay with pass interference. That's a physical deal. I'm not okay with false starts. Let's not get on a drive to where all of a sudden you're like false start, you know, once or twice in a row, and you just feel sloppy about it, right? And it looks unfocused. Take care of business that way and lock in and have a clean game.
Yeah, I'm going to completely piggyback off of you, James. That was the exact same thing I wrote down as my first one. Just no turnovers, just play a clean game, penalties, et cetera, et cetera. It's Ohio State could probably have five turnovers and they'll blow out Rutgers. But Michigan State, while they're not as good as Ohio State, they had seven turnovers and that allowed Rutgers to beat them in week one. So as long as Ohio State plays a clean game, they will get a chance to get some of that depth in there into the third and fourth quarter.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, these are conference games, guys. You could repeat the three things you're doing right now next week probably for Maryland. You'd have a lot of the same things. Number two for me, young playmakers. Who shines? Who makes a big play? Jameson Williams, we heard about him all offseason. Be nice to see him make a big play in this game. Not in the context of win or lose, but just a flashy play, a wow play. Does Julian Fleming have his breakout moment, you know, on Saturday night as well? Steel Chambers, more of him in the run game. This is for the young skill guys. This is your time to shine. I mentioned the young quarterbacks. It's your time to shine. My guess is Ryan Day will start working them in a little bit more. You can't just have Olave and Wilson all the time. So you're going to start working those guys in a little bit more. I'm curious to see who really grabs, you know, that playmaker beyond those guys by the throat. We saw it and Jigba do it in the opener with incredible play. Is anyone else going to enter into that fray?
My second thing, defensively, that's how I always think of the game first. How does a win, you know, if we're going to win, how does a win feel just sloppy and like you didn't get stuff done? It's allowing explosive plays. That's what it is. If you know, it's the sloppy, oh, you know, someone drops coverage or someone gets beat. Like, there should be no explosive plays allowed. And by that, there should be no touchdowns because Rutgers doesn't have the skill to methodically move the ball down the field on you. So if you want to come out of a clean game on defense, you say, we didn't allow an explosive play, play a 20-plus, play a 30-plus pop on us because we played clean.
Yeah, my second thing is just going to be to continue to build that depth behind Fields, especially. He's obviously clearly the most important guy, but even just across the board. I mean, just last week you saw Cam Brown go out. He tore his Achilles, and that's just one more guy that you kind of knock on wood and hope it doesn't happen. But eventually at some point it is likely, I think, that Ohio State may get hit by COVID. You never know. Like, there's a decent chance that one of those positions could do it. So just continue to build that depth behind the front line, guys.
All right, finally for me, and this kind of echoes, we're all kind of thinking the same things on this one, but a phrase we use a lot on the show is act accordingly. So what does that mean? Well, what that means is that the people who aren't watching this game are bailed on it early and are watching Clemson Notre Dame. And when the bottom line comes across midway through the third quarter, have it read 49-7. Have it be 42-0 at half. Because in games like this, that's what people pay the closest attention to. If the fight, if you end up winning by 30 or 28 because Rutgers scores points in the fourth quarter, no one's going to pay attention to that. What you're going to pay attention to is, were you dominant? How do you determine you're dominant? By being so from jump street. That's the way you do it. Clemson had one of these a couple of weeks ago where Lawrence, I want to say it was against Georgia Tech, where he threw for 390 and five scores at half.
Yeah.
That's how you act accordingly in big-time college football. Do that.
Yeah. I had act accordingly listed down as well, and for that same reason. Last year's game isn't going to be good enough when you look at the box scores. They scored 23 points on us last year. There's no universe in which the talent being what it is that it should be 23 points let up. So act accordingly and, yep, and take care of business. And that's especially, I mean, it's all three phases. You just got to be locked in. Can you focus for 3 hours and move on?
My last thing, just let Justin Fields cook. I mean, these guys, you know, Ohio State's on a pretty ridiculous run here of quarterbacks going back to Miller, Barrett, Haskins, et cetera, but Fields might be the best one of them all. I mean, he's going to be the highest draft pick out of all of them, certainly. And so just let him go, man. He's got, what, probably 8 or 9 games left, if my math is correct, is in a Buckeye uniform. So let him cook. He'll probably be sitting by the third and fourth quarter, but when he's in there, let him go.
Absolutely. And Bodie, your score for this one, a 38-point.
56-13, Ohio State.
Threes?
Yeah, I got.
Although you don't have to do it because you. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have to do it. Yeah, go on. You know what I got. 52-9.
That does it, yeah. Yeah, I think we're all kind of in the same vicinity here. I got 56-17. I hope it's 42-0 at half, and you kind of cruise to, you know, they get a couple of scores in the fourth as they start to work a little bit. But look, this is, it's overwhelming. And folks, we, just so you are aware, it's Maryland next week. It's Illinois after that. It's Michigan State after that. That's where we're at. So yep, the thing that we just did will be repeated over the course of the next couple of weeks. And so it's critical that Ryan Day and his team are focused to handle their business. And I think because every game's a gift, I think they will be. Enjoy your Buckeyes Saturday, everybody. Threes, good luck on the call. Not that you need it, but I look forward to hearing you on the call, my friend. And, of course, Rothman and Ice are coming up next. We're back on a Monday to break it all down. Bishop and Laurinaitis right here on The Fan.
I trust Atlas Butler because they've been a local company for over 100 years. Not that you should trust everyone just because they're local. Atlas Butler, yes. Guy who sells watches out of his car, maybe not.